no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to a special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, recapping the first day of free agency 2021. Alongside Dave Manuk, alongside Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mindell. We welcome you to the program on this Wednesday evening, recapping what was undoubtedly a very busy day in the NHL. Less busy in terms of free agent signings for the Winnipeg Jets than some of the other teams, but the Jets did take care of a lot of their work earlier this week. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Wednesday evening. A frenzy indeed, as they like to say. Keeping up with all the moves and all the money spent today was a difficult task as teams went a little bit haywire with some of the contracts they give out, as they usually do at the start of free agency.
Yeah, absolutely, boys. And kind of bittersweet show tonight, right? Because it's our last show of the 2020-21 season, but it's going to be nice to have a full month off in August, right? Spend a little bit more time, in nature and with the family. But, you know, boys, I thought it was going to be the summer of Drew up until 3 days ago, but obviously it's the summer of Chevy. And yes, obviously I was planning on using that one for the last 2 or 3 hours. But I don't think we expected that many signings. Like, we thought that Chevy might, you know, acquire maybe a forward or maybe a depth piece. Certainly the Jets don't have a lack of defensemen right now, right? But it started with the Brendan Dillon acquisition. And then, after Nate Schmidt was acquired, you know, you started to really see how this Jets team was going to transform. And I know we're going to get into these moves here, Drew, but, you know, I really like both of these moves. Like, you give up the 3 draft picks, but we know that, you know, the Jets are a team that wants to go farther than the second round, and they have a lot of good young prospects in the system. The most recent one, you know, top end prospect being Chaz Lucius. So I like the moves. We'll get more into them, but, you know, certainly Chevy has addressed a need. He's brought in 2 top 4 defensemen, and, you know, we'll talk about how that's going to affect a guy like, you know, Ville Heinola or Logan Stanley. But, you know, Chevy needed to beef up the defense, and that's what he did. So yeah, there might be a few minor moves coming for the Jets, but as you mentioned, certainly other teams, you know, really were throwing the money around, and, you know, some contracts were better than others, but, sometimes you're just going to have to, you know, pay that premium, you know, to make sure that another team doesn't get your guy. So at one point it was kind of hard to keep track of these signings. Like, I had to kind of step away from my phone, guys, and get off Twitter, because it seemed like a signing was coming in every 10 seconds, right? And there's still some guys left on the board, but it seemed like, you know, they left the best for last. And, you know, Dougie Hamilton, they announced that contract with the Devils. Apparently the Canes, you know, tried a last minute ditch effort to keep Dougie Hamilton, but obviously the Devils were offering more money. So, you know, we'll go through these moves, but a lot of teams have really, you know, I think, to me, shown that, you know, they're not happy. Like, even a team like the LA Kings bringing in Philip Deneau, right? That's a lot of money to offer him, and he's a great two-way forward, you know, one of the best defensive forwards in the league. But that's a lot of money for a guy that on a good team is most likely a third line center. Probably on LA he's a second line center behind Kopitar. But I was a little bit surprised by some of those moves, but we'll get into them here as the show goes on here.
Yes, we absolutely will get into them over the course of the next couple hours. A quick update as to our guests on this Wednesday evening. We're going to be joined in a little while by our good friend Murad Atesh of The Athletic. Talk about the moves the Jets made, you know, the acquisition re-signing of Paul Stastny, the acquisition of Brendan Dillon and Nate Schmidt. And then coming up in about an hour's time at the top of hour number 2, 9 o'clock Central Time tonight, the Jets backup goaltender, presumptive backup goaltender, I should say, Eric Comrie is going to join us on the program as he re-signs with the Jets as well, Dave, for that 1 year in the $750,000. Just sort of a quick maybe umbrella thought about everything that happened both with the Jets and with the around the entire NHL with today's moves before we get into it a little bit deeper.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting last few days, Drew, because, you know, we're really finishing the draft and everything's condensed and you're expecting the free agency, obviously, on Wednesday. And then, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff and his team strike on Monday. And you're like, okay, you know, that happened. And then right out, like the sign and then the trade. And then, again, give him credit. That was a solid trade. You know, you've got a team. We've talked about it all season long. And we talked about it specifically since the playoffs have ended, that this team had to make moves to solidify their defense. Mm-hmm. But what did he do? He did exactly what he needed to do. And Tuesday night, the same. Like, I thought, okay, it's all done. Then all of a sudden, late, the Schmidt deal happens. I'm like, okay, it's done. Start doing something else. All of a sudden, boom, look at the phone. Eric Comrie's in the backup role. So, and you know what? It's interesting, right? Like, that's a move that kind of made sense because there's a familiarity. And I've been talking about it. He and you know,
Hellebuck.
Connor Hellebuck have a long relationship dating back to the Moose days in 2015-16 when the Moose came back to Winnipeg from St. John's. There's a little overlap, I think, in St. John's, but primarily Comrie was still playing with Tri-City. So I think there is that familiarity. And so, I was on this thought process that this makes a little sense because from a cap perspective for the Jets, you have to be able to find some cost certainty, and you really can't afford the way Connor Hellebuck plays to spend a lot of money on your backup. Now, some would say, well, if you have an injury, then you're in trouble if you don't have a capable backup. But the truth is, you can't have everything. You know, folks can say, oh, why can't you just – because you just can't. There's something called a salary cap. So as a result, you need cost certainty, which is why, actually, I think Paul Maurice's hand is going to be forced a little bit, which is probably a good thing because guys like David Gustin, Christian Vesalainen, Jansen Harkins, those guys who have that cost certainty are going to be able to get in the lineup, whereas they may not normally if there was a little more money. So I thought it was a real interesting day. I think the Jets hit a home run. I mean, you got to give Kevin Cheveldayoff and his staff credit again because they did exactly what we've been talking about, saying they couldn't go in to another season without solidifying their defense. And what did they do? They brought in a guy like the right side of the defense, structured, the left side of their defense, structured. And the truth is, one is you create, and I mentioned this yesterday on Twitter, you create competition for some of these young guys. That's not a bad thing to try and force their way into the lineup the way Logan Stanley did. And people say, oh, that was because of injury. Sabisa got injured. Stanley got the opportunity. But you have to be ready. You have to be, and it allows guys like Kovacevic and Sandberg maybe to have a little more time in the AHL.
Yeah, so let's get right into it. Let's start with the moves on the defense because that was sort of the big talking point this entire offseason, and that was what everybody knew had to be priority number one for this Winnipeg Jets team. The defense simply wasn't good enough, hasn't been good enough for a couple years. I mean, I give Kevin Cheveldayoff credit here. He went out and he targeted a couple of defensemen that certainly fit what the Winnipeg Jets needed, and he got them, and he didn't pay an overwhelming price in terms of draft picks given up. I mean, to be able to get Nate Schmidt out of Vancouver for a third round pick, you know, and I know that Nate Schmidt was a bit of a depressed asset given how bad his year was last year with the Canucks, but you could say that about a lot of different people in Vancouver. If Nate Schmidt bounces back and is closer to the player we saw in Vegas than the player that you saw last year in Vancouver, well, to get that kind of player for a third round pick, that's a job well done. Then you go to, you know, Washington, a guy that has been linked to the Jets for a number of years, Brendan Dillon. Well, you know, big, physical, you know, but not cement shoes, not a guy who's one dimensional, a guy who can play in your top four, without any real second thought about it. You look at this Jets team, and this was a Jets team that before this week started had a ton of questions as to what their blue line was going to be. Did they have enough really NHL caliber defensemen? After, you know, as we sit here tonight, I mean, this Jets team looks like it's got five top four defensemen in Morrissey, Pionk, Dylan Schmidt, and Dylan DeMello. That's a job well done by Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff.
Yeah, I agree with that, Drew. And, you know, Nate Schmidt could easily be your top pairing defenseman on the right side with Josh Morrissey, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, that those are the questions that are going to be asked, you know, throughout the summer into September in training camp, right? Like, could Paul Maurice start the season off with Morrissey and Pionk? Or, you know, could we see, if it is Morrissey and Schmidt, could you see, you know, Brendan Dillon and Neil Pionk, and then could your third pair be Logan Stanley and Dylan DeMello, right? So I think we know with quite a lot of certainty who the Jets' top six is going to be. And then, as I mentioned, you know, right off the top of the show, and we'll bring Murad here in about 5 minutes or so, and we'll ask him, you know, how he kind of sees the D pairings. But, I mean, guys, the D pairings on the opening night or the first couple weeks of the season, I mean, that can change, right? The point is, as you mentioned, they've brought in, you know, two 30-year-old defensemen, and Dave mentioned cost certainty earlier. And like when you're talking about Schmidt, yeah, he makes $5.9 million. And, you know, that's going to, you know, it's going to be tight for the Jets because you have to assume Neil Pionk's going to be around, you know, I don't know, five, you know, Drew thinks he might even be closer to $6 million. But regardless, I mean, once, you know, you include Brian Little's LTIR, I mean, mm-hmm. You know, that's going to get eaten up, right? Because Andrew Kopp's probably going to be around 4 to 4.5. Like, again, I'm not a cap specialist. That's Dave M here. But, I mean, we know that cap, the Jets are going to be right up against the cap. And then Logan Stanley, he's going to get a bit of a raise. He's not going to, you know, get a crazy raise because we expect it to be a shorter-term deal. But the point is, there's not going to be a lot of money left over after Kopp, Pionk, and Stanley are signed, right? And you might throw in a depth forward in there as well. Even though I agree with Dave, I think David Gustafson and Christian Vesalainen, you know, are going to factor in on the third and fourth lines here. Maybe even, you know, Vesalainen gets a look on the second line. But I really like Schmidt. Like, Schmidt's a guy that obviously, you know, his advanced stats were not good in Vancouver, but like, this is a guy that was a big part of Vegas's top four, you know, in their run in 2018 and up until he was traded. And it's kind of funny, boys, because, you know, Vancouver gave up a third round pick to get Nate Schmidt, right? Because we knew that they had to clear some room. And to me, what stands out about these moves by Chevy is opportunistic, right? Like, Washington wanted to move out Brendan Dillon's money because they basically needed every single penny for Alex Ovechkin. I'm joking, obviously. But I mean, they have a lot of money tied up in guys like John Carlson, Dmitry Orlov. I mean, you've still got Justin Schultz there, who we thought might be an option for Seattle in the expansion draft. And then when you're talking about Nate Schmidt, as soon as you acquire Oliver Ekman-Larsson and then you sign Connor Garland to that contract, you just have to add up, you have to put two and two together, right? Like, Nate Schmidt's contract was the one that everyone was looking at saying, okay, Jim Benning's going to probably try to move him. So Chevy gives up a third round pick. Like, that's not a that heavy a price to pay. You don't give up anybody off your roster. You don't give away any top prospects
for a top four defenseman. I mean, exactly. I mean, that's a crazy low price to pay for a guy that you think is going to be in your top four for the next, you know, 4 years. It's not like this is a 1 year rental. You know that with Nate Schmidt and with Brendan Dillon, you know exactly what you have to pay them for the next 3 or 4 years, respectively. And you know that, you know, granted they might diminish a little bit as players, but, you know, time will tell on that front. If they don't, you've got top four defensemen at a reasonable price that fit within your salary structure and that fit within sort of your timeline for the team. And I know that, you know, the what you're going to hear ad nauseum going forward, Dave, is the idea of this Wheeler window. You know, Mike McIntyre wrote about it it's already online, so it'll be in tomorrow's Free Press. This Wheeler window is 3 years, and really that's what the Jets have sort of done for the next 3 years. They said, we're going for it for the next 3 years. And there was no other alternative. You couldn't sort of just keep going with this treading water that you've seen over the last couple of years. You couldn't really get out from underneath any of these, you know, quote unquote, bad contracts. So you had to go for it, but you went for it in a way that it really doesn't mortgage you any longer than just this 3 year window.
There's no question about it. And Chevy would have been ripped apart, most likely by us, if he wouldn't have done anything.
I would never rip Chevy, Dave. Never.
Well, okay, I would. But the point is, yeah, Drew definitely would have. But the point is, you gotta,
but,
you know.
Just for the record, when I do it, I'm fair about it.
No, I'm not unfair. Of course, you're not just doing it for the sake of doing it. You're doing it because you have what you feel is a legitimate position. Yes. I mean, what it comes down to is you had to do something. You talked about it. We've talked about it for a long time. I think I talked about it in the last week's show, although there are like 10 of them, so we should probably be a little more specific. But I think what it comes down to is, what did I say? I said you've got Connor Hellebuck in his prime. You got Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler. You got Kyle Connor, Nikolaj Ehlers. You got favorable deals for most of these guys. Adam Lowry, potentially Andrew Kopp. Your window is now. I'm not saying your window can't be renewed. Good drafting will allow you to renew the window. And, you know, here's a crazy thing. If you actually allow your prospects to develop instead of using the Atlanta model and throwing them right into the NHL, maybe those guys will be ready for 10-year careers when these guys are slowing down. So I actually think this is – it's not only is it giving you a much more solid, much more realistic window for right now, but it's also allowing you to set up for the future with guys like Sandberg and Chisholm and Kovacevic and not rushing them. But here's Murat. So
There he is. Murat Ateş of The Athletic. Looking good, Murat. Welcome back to Winnipeg. How was your vacation, buddy?
It was a beautiful time. Thanks for having me back in the city and on the show too. Thank you so much. Yeah,
you're welcome. I don't think we have the power to keep you out of the city, but I appreciate the thank you nonetheless.
We would never do that.
Yes, certainly not. You know, Murat, obviously we were talking about the retooled Winnipeg Jets defense. And even before, you know, the nuttiness of free agency where money gets spent like a drunken sailor, you sort of had to appreciate what Kevin Cheveldayoff did in not giving up a ton of assets, not giving up a ton of draft picks in acquiring Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon, you know, two second round picks, a third round pick. You had the cost certainty. But then when you look at it again in the context of what it would have cost the Winnipeg Jets had they dipped into free agency today, I mean, I think you really almost get another layer of appreciation for what Kevin Cheveldayoff did in retooling this Jets defense this week.
Yeah, it's just a sea change in the quality of that top four when you can add Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon to it. And the cap hit maybe influences some of the acquisition prices to a certain degree. But at the same time, you're right. You're not subtracting from the on-ice roster in terms of 2 seconds or a third round pick for these guys. They're bona fide top four players for the first time since 2018, 2019. Winnipeg isn't leaning on guys to play out of their element or a couple spots higher on the ladder than they traditionally have or can even point to in terms of NHL success. And that's meaningful. I know that some folks will point to, you know, David Savard. Well, oh gosh, that was a cheap contract with Montreal. But I think there's a reason why that's a cheap contract with Montreal. That was a city you very much wanted to go to. So given what the situation was, and if you appreciate Kevin Cheveldayoff's point of view as well, you know, the specific qualities in Brendan Dillon as a stay-at-home guy who can go up ice, or Nate Schmidt, a guy who loves to go up ice but can play in his own zone as well. There's some really special things about the guys that they added, and they're genuine top four defensemen. I think it's a great week for Winnipeg fans.
I agree, Murat. And you're writing about this, this week in the last couple of days for The Athletic. And, you know, I love on Twitter sometimes, you know, it almost seems like you're just kind of thinking out loud and you were already going over the kind of D pairings. And right before you came on, you know, we were talking about, you know, the possibility of maybe a Morrissey Schmidt top pair. And then you've maybe got Brendan Dillon and Neil Pionk as your second pair. And then maybe it's Logan Stanley and Dylan DeMello. But obviously, you know that, you know, these pairs can change. But when you first, you know, saw that the Jets had acquired Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon, I know that, you know, the kind of line combinations were going inside your head probably, but how do you see kind of the Jets top six looking, not necessarily on opening night, but throughout the season? And where do you think this leaves Ville Heinola? I know I'm bringing all the hard hitting questions here, but I imagine a lot of Jets fans were kind of wondering, you know, kind of where does this leave Heinola and, you know, some of the other Jets that are deeper on the depth chart?
Yeah, I mean, welcome back to Winnipeg. Here's all the hard questions. Figure out how they're going to use these guys. Thank you, Ezra Ginsberg. But they're the right questions, aren't they, right? I mean, that's where Winnipeg needs to go and sort these things out. I think the shortest answer is Ville Heinola. I think it would take just the camp of the century for him to overcome the amount of veterans that have been signed and brought in to play with the Winnipeg Jets. I think this is going to be a case of him starring in the AHL. I think that there's some observers, and you know, you guys are all over the AHL with the illegal curve. So like, there are times when he's simply too good for that league. Does that mean he's ready for the NHL, especially with these veterans standing in his way? I'm not necessarily sure, but my goodness, that's a quality player. I would like to see him move into the NHL instance on that third pairing if all goes well. But you know, you point to it. There's a very clear top six in Winnipeg right now based on what we've seen. Logan Stanley and Dylan DeMello have every power to crush it on the third pairing. And then you get into the questions. I think it's a little bit oversimplified to say Schmidt is the transition guy offensively. Guy moves the puck. He loves jumping into the rush. He has the wheels. He also is a tremendous breakout passer. And Brendan Dillon is the stay-at-home guy because they can both do a little of the other thing. You know, Brendan Dillon isn't above jumping into a play. Nate Schmidt isn't above, you know, offering quality defense in his own zone as well. But when I think of it that way, then I think that Brendan Dillon is likely the Neil Pionk partner. And, you know, stylistically, Derek Forbert was who we saw, you know, as a big, strong, powerful defenseman. But this would be a significant upgrade. And I think that you could really run a Brendan Dillon-Neil Pionk pairing against just about anybody and at least come out treading water, perhaps if they're elite, but better than that if not. And then there's a little bit of chaos with that Morrissey-Schmidt pairing. But as somebody pointed out to me on Twitter, you know, Morrissey excelled with Jacob Trouba, who has a little bit of chaos in his game as well. I think it's going to be about chemistry. The key thing in all of this, however you run it out, I mean, these guys are quality. This is a sea change. Get better. You know, players like Mark Scheifele are going to look like better defensive players this year because the stops are going to come earlier and the puck movement's going to be better. And I think that's, you know, however you draw it up, a lot to like.
Murat, you are quality. The Jets' top six is quality, but you are quality too as well, my man.
Murat Atesh is our guest Wednesday evening. You're watching, you're listening, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, free agency recap show 2021. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
Murat, there's a million questions that are Jets related because there was so much stuff happening this week. But Nate Schmidt's energy just blew me away today. And obviously it blew Kevin Cheveldae off the way because he was still talking about it in his press conference. So what do you think? I mean, we talk about guys who are good in the room, but when you're a guy who's good in the room, sometimes people lament the fact that he's a fourth line grinder and he's there at the expense of a David Gustafson. But Nate Schmidt is a guy who's good in the, potentially good in the room, but he's also good on the ice. So how important do you think it will be for a Jets team that sometimes can be a little bit tight to have a guy that's going to bring that kind of infectious attitude to the room off the ice?
Yeah, I mean, we've been clamoring for this, or at least I tend to labor against this idea of good in the room sometimes because I know it's important. And, you know, I remember walking in, I'm taking this one for a walk, but I remember walking into the Jets dressing room when Matt Hendricks was acquired fresh. Mm-hmm. And this was going to be a fourth line, sometimes fifth line player. And there's all sorts of consternation, but what's he actually bringing on the ice? The numbers weren't necessarily good. He called himself a pace car against Nashville in the playoffs. Things were going pretty quick. At the same time, I remember what space he held in that place. And I remember watching people defer to him, listen to him, trust his wisdom. When he walked through the room, people took notice. And this is, you know, fluffy pie in the sky stuff. But for these guys who respond so well to leadership, who respond so well to those kinds of dispositions, there is something to that. Well, add that to a Nate Schmidt who can play inside the top four. Add that to a Brendan Dillon. Add that to a Paul Stastny, who we've talked about, you know, all year. He was the one who called out Winnipeg's cheat in their game, but he did it in such a respectful way everybody could engage with it. And so, to your point about all of those guys, this is a, I think there's a real theme to who Winnipeg has brought in. Eric Comrie as well, though I anticipate he's a backup goaltender and he's still looking to prove himself at, you know, at that NHL level over an extended period of time. But there's a real theme in terms of personality. And then specifically Schmidt, he's the loosey-goosey, lighthearted, hilarious one. And like Cheveldae said, I mean, there's a little bit of Bufflin in that. And I think that there's an importance to that in a room that you, like you say, I mean, a lot of the leaders are more your serious, you know, serious types than maybe a Schmidt will bring some levity.
You mentioned Paul Stastny, Murat, and that leads seamlessly into my question about him. Of course, the Jets re-signed him to a, you know, a very reasonable. There's an old adage that we have on the show. There's no such thing as a bad one-year contract, and that would certainly fall under that category. You know, it goes back to the question almost that we had all of this past season about him as a centerman or him as a winger and how that affects with Pierre-Luc Dubois. So from your perspective and your depth chart as it sits here on the 28th of July, is Stastny the centerman on that second line with Dubois on the wing, or is it vice versa?
For me, I mean, over the course of the season, they'll both do it. Absolutely, they will. For me, I start with Paul Stastny in the middle. And I that might actually be counter to what he was hinting at in his own press conference the other day. Got to find the exact quote to be sure. But the reason I like Paul Stastny in the middle and Pierre-Luc Dubois on the wing is, first of all, we have the veteran presence of Stastny. He's been around the NHL for many years. There's just such a consistency to his positioning. He still drives play from a possession metric point of view. You know, even at this stage of his career, at 35, turning 36, I believe, in December. And so he's not just veteran presence. He's really smart defensive presence, good positionally, not a burner speed-wise, but certainly he's in the right places at the right times. I think you can be more sure that he'll succeed with the defensive responsibilities and the multiple responsibilities, because Winnipeg leans on its centers very much in all three zones. And then Pierre-Luc Dubois, I just think that we need to acknowledge that it was not a tremendously hot start to his Winnipeg Jets career. You know, you've got the quarantine, you have the injury, pardon me, after quarantine, a little bit of mixed results, and he gets hurt right before playoffs, comes back, and he says he wasn't injured. And I think that that's, you know, a real good Canadian boy kind of business in terms of that. Either way, it was a tough year for him. And for me, if you're looking at the long game with Pierre-Luc Dubois being a really important Winnipeg Jet, you're looking for that transition, which is stepwise, one level at a time. And for me, left wing is a simpler job, maybe tougher on the boards for the breakouts, but the amount of responsibilities are fewer. And he's an absolute burner with speed. He's a big, strong, powerful guy. I think let him light it up on the wing, or not even light it up, but just assert himself on the wing for a little while. And then the long game will move him to center in time.
Rat, the Jets obviously made a few minor moves today, but we know that, you know, the big moves to come are, you know, taking care of those RFAs with Kopp and Pionk right at the top. And then obviously Logan Stanley isn't less important, but obviously we expect that to be most likely a shorter term deal. But I thought you mentioned something interesting earlier about the types of players that Chevy's brought in, specifically Schmidt and Dillon, veteran players, and, you know, comparing Byfuglien to Schmidt, I think is very interesting, because I do think there are a lot of parallels there. But even though bringing in Schmidt and Dillon might, you know, mean that Ville Heinola is not going to play as much in the NHL during the 21-22 season, just the fact that you've brought Paul Stastny back and you know that, you know, there isn't a lot of money left to bring in any more free agents, isn't this a sign that you are going to see, you know, more ice time for guys like David Gustafson, Jansen Harkins, Christian Vesalainen, where it looked like after that second round series against the Montreal Canadiens, the Jets might go with, you know, the traditional more veteran fourth line, veteran third line? Like, how do you see kind of, you know, that playing out in terms of those younger forwards, you know, in the kind of third and fourth line roles?
Yeah, I'm not ready to cement their jobs, any of them, even though I, you know, I like aspects of every single one of those players' games. You know, Jansen Harkins, he strikes me more like a player who grew up playing skill, like a skilled version of hockey, produced a lot of points at a few different levels, but has the motor of a guy who can play in the bottom six, as opposed to a pure grinder who doesn't have the touch or a plan with the puck when he gets it. David Gustafson, I love him to be a middle six center in the future. I think that, you know, Andrew Kopp, Adam Lowry, that's the type of role that I would see David Gustafson growing into personally. And then Christian Vesalainen, a lot of skills, a lot of tools. He'd fallen back on the radar for me prospect-wise heading into this season. But at camp, he impressed. He was using his size in particular ways. He was getting into position to use his shot. Still hasn't produced a lot. And so I wonder if you're the Winnipeg Jets, you have the opportunity to give them opportunity, playing time, see what they do. But at the same time, you have this track record of signing Matt Hendricks, Mark Letestu, Nate Thompson, Trevor Lewis on a PTO. Sometimes these things happen a little bit later in the offseason. And Kevin Cheveldayoff said today he still has some veterans on that out there that he likes. Whether they bring them in or not, I'm not sure. So I'm still not sure what happens there. Their advantages, certainly if you're Jansen Harkins making, I think it's in the 700s in terms of his 700,000 something, you know, contractually, you're an advantage over, say, Cole Perfetti, who's 900 plus bonuses as well. But there's another young player who, based on his performance, might make a lot of teams. I don't know. I think that there's still a little bit of juggling to be done. And I'm curious to see how they play it, because cap-wise, they do need, whether it's youth or veterans, to be extremely affordable to make everything fit and to keep Neil Pionk and keep Andrew Kopp and make the best version of the on-ice Winnipeg Jets that you can find.
Murat, in the press conference today with Kevin Cheveldayoff, I thought one of his comments that was interesting was about Eric Comrie and the idea that after we saw Laurent Brossoit sign elsewhere, I mean, again, I talked to you earlier about it's that idea of cost certainty. And that's an area where you can save because, A, you know Connor Hellebuyck is going to be, you know, a workhorse and take most of the starts anyways. And B, here's a guy that is very familiar with the organization. The organization has a lot of trust in him. But how big a factor do you think? I mean, this is my own feeling. I don't know what your thoughts on this are. But how big a factor do you think it would be for Eric Comrie And I'm not asking you to be nice because he's going to be on in half an hour. But how much significant do you think it'll be for him to have the certainty to know that there isn't that worry about waivers and where am I going to be? Am I getting claimed by Detroit? There will be a certain level of certainty. And again, that's not complacency, but that allows his mind to just focus on what's important, which is hockey, which, you know, and there's so many goaltending experts who are telling me this about Comrie and this about Burton. I'm thinking, I've watched every single game and I'm no goalie expert. And I've watched every single game these guys have played. So I can't imagine how many people are telling me all this stuff who haven't watched the game, but are going to tell me that this is what there's this guy's ceiling is or that guy's ceiling is. Regardless, but how big an impact do you think that'll have for him to be able to come into this situation, which seems like it's playing itself, especially with, like I said, their connectivity from him and Hellebuck when they played in 2015-16 on the Moose?
Yeah, I think it's very important for him personally. And I can't even begin to imagine the roller coaster. And I know we interviewed him for, you know, as Winnipeg's Masterton nominee, almost on an account of the journey that he's been on. You know, leaves the organization twice, returns twice. You know, gone through the ringer waivers wise, traded back as well. I mean, he's gone through a lot. He's covered a lot of kilometers, a lot of miles. I believe he became New Jersey's only undefeated goaltender in franchise history, which is a fun one. And you know, every time he left the organization, whether he's picked up on, you know, picked up on waivers as he was, they wanted him back. Like they value the person, they value the player. He'd been such a foundational part of the Manitoba Moose for so long. And now he gets his chance, right? Because I'm not going to sit here and sell Eric Comrie as anything other than an NHL level gamble. I'm not ready to anoint him successful career backup because we haven't seen that yet. At this stage of his career, I think it's more to prove, to earn, to cement himself. But like to your point, Dave, now he really gets the chance because not waivers exempt by contract alone. I mean, that spot is his. Winnipeg's cap issues by contract alone, that spot is his. They're not waiving him. They're not sending him anywhere. Kevin Cheveldayoff said this is his time. He's going to get full consistent reps with the Winnipeg Jets at practice. He's going to get into games consistently with the same defense in front of him and improve defense at that. I mean, it's a much better situation that Eric Comrie is walking into than at any point in his career. And hopefully for Jets fans, that means he seizes it and proves all of these experts wrong. Or even me, who's calling it a gamble because I'm not sure what to expect. Well, maybe shove it in my face if he just crushes it and outperforms the Laurent Brossoit, you know, over the course of a year.
Murat, I know. We have just a couple questions left because I know you've got you were mentioning yesterday you've got a soccer game coming up, so we want you to make sure that you get your stretching in. I wanted to ask you about we always bring you on and focus on the Jets, but I kind of wanted to because all of the moves happened today and there's been a lot of moves going back to the first round of the draft, even before that actually. But it's I find it tough to kind of digest and really make sense of a lot of these moves. But looking at it from kind of a macro level, like what was your kind of big take on what happened today? Like what were some of the moves maybe that surprised you, and maybe was there one or two teams that you really like what they did outside of here in Winnipeg?
My goodness, I find this day difficult to digest, to yes. be honest. Those NHL insider types are the ones who are on the shows all day long who do the NHL wide stuff. I mean, I just can't imagine how they're trying to add context to these things as they come in. One of the lessons though that I took away, when you see Tucker Pullman get a raise, Derek Forbert get a raise, Laurent Brossoit get a raise, Thompson and Lewis sign in other cities, but specifically the defensemen. I think one of the morals of free agency is that players get paid based on the role that they played, the ice time that they had. For me, a little bit more so than how much they crushed that role, because I think a lot of Winnipeg Jets defensemen over the years have been put just that one level above where they would absolutely destroy it. And Derek Forbert started hot, but probably that top four role was tough for him over the course of the season. Tucker Pullman, my goodness, I could not find a third pairing defenseman I liked more when he broke into the league in 2017-2018. But as a top pairing defenseman, I don't think it always went well for Winnipeg. I mean, he and Morrissey were outmatched. And so I think that their top four roles got them paid. And then you look around the league at some of the money that goes around. And yes, Winnipeg may not be a destination for a lot of free agents. And certainly we had the rigmarole with the Nate Schmidt situation where he wanted to buy time to figure out his trade situation as well. I think that Winnipeg building through trades in advance of all of this? That's the lesson I'll take away, and I'll keep it local. Pardon me, Ezra.
You don't have to apologize to Ezra ever.
No, well, definitely not.
Well, you welcome me back into the city. I mean, you guys are having me in this city. You're letting me keep the WPG Marat hashtag or a username on Twitter. So I do my best to be nice. But I think Winnipeg did well to build the way that they built, because I don't think it was going to work for them, especially cap-wise, to do it any other way.
Okay, last question for you, Marat. All the talk now is about the defense and how it more resembles the defense of 17-18 when the Jets had such success getting all the way to the Western Conference Finals. Do you think Paul Maurice needs to change the structure of how this team plays night in, night out with the better defense that they now have? We know the last 2 years he's been pulling the reins on the horses so much to, ensure that they were protecting the defensive zone more. Can he open it up a little bit more and this team can get to resemble more of the 17-18 version with this new defense?
I agree. Some of the best conversations I had, I was able to have a couple of one-on-one conversations with him in 2018, 2019, when things were kind of the beginning of the Buffalo-less era and the changes that he was making. And, he really did, and they as a team really did, base their strategy around the personnel that they had. It was extremely personnel driven. And with, a defense built around Anthony Betetto and Lucas Pisa and et cetera, there was a conscientious decision on the Jets' part to back way off of that offensive blue line, to give up ice in the neutral zone, and basically just not get beat, except that you're going to end up in your own zone and do the best you can to protect the middle of the ice. It didn't go well. Was there a strategy elsewise that could have gone well with that roster? I'm not sure. That was a tough defensive group. Like, look at how they were built. Look at the amount of sub $1 million contracts that Winnipeg carried that year. It was genuinely difficult. So the Jets do make their strategic choices, especially defensively, especially pressure-wise. We used to love how aggressively they pinch with Bufflin and with Trouba, with Myers up the wall. And the amount of waves offensively that they had. Even in transition, you'd see them attack the blue line, offensive blue line, 4-on-3, 4-on-2, and it would lead to better chances and better zone time in the offensive zone. So I think we'll be looking for more of that with a more mobile defense. I think that Nate Schmidt will be counted on for a lot of that. I think everybody will too. And, if they stay as passive as they were in 2018, 2019, for example, it would be a horrible mistake. I just don't think that that's where they'll go with it.
Marat Atesh covers the Winnipeg Jets for The Athletic. Marat, go play soccer. I hope you do better than I did. I'm coaching my 4-year-old son. Today was our third week of playing. I finally now have them going in the right direction towards the right net. Took me 3 weeks, so hopefully you'll be better than that.
That's a beautiful time. I hope to also go the right direction tonight.
Thanks, buddy. Be well. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks Marat.
There he goes, Marat Atesh, joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, more on the Jets, more on the moves they've made. Eric Comrie joins us in 20 minutes' time. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Wednesday evening, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. As he mentioned, just a quick reminder that tonight's program will be our final one until after Labor Day, our final scheduled one, let's say, until after Labor Day. Don't be shocked if we pop up here or then with some, when the Jets have some significant breaking news, maybe a Pionk signing or a Kopp signing or something like those. So don't be surprised if you see us a little bit in August, but there will not be a show for the next few Saturdays as we spend a little bit of quality time with our beloved family members.
And if there is a pop-up show, it'll be Dave will be broadcasting from a pontoon boat in Lake of the Woods.
I think that would be a fine place for Dave to broadcast from. I mean, I don't see any problem with that. You can just, tether your phone and pontoon your heart away, Mr. Manuk.
That's what I say to you. I've done illegal curving at the top of a mountain before, so nothing is impossible.
Would that be a Manitoba-esque mountain?
Northwestern Ontario.
Close enough. Okay.
But it was a beautiful spot to do some illegal curving, let me tell you.
I thought it was Mount Fuji.
No, that one too. Okay.
Yeah, there too. All right.
I will say, for those in the chat, not that everybody isn't going to be aware of what I'm about to say, for any news that is happening when it's Jets related, of course, the site is illegalcurve.com. And I have to tell you, the site has been blowing up for the last 5 days. I mean, it's been as I said on the weekend, the draft is my favorite time of the year. It is the busiest time of the year, but like, I love it. I love it so much that a fan said, DM'd me and said, "Hey, is there going to be a Saturday podcast?" And I was exhausted and I was like, so tired. I'm like, you know what? One person wants it. I'm going to do it. And it turned out actually to be a pretty good show. So I cut it down and made it a decent one. But the point is, we're gonna keep bringing you as much content as we can as you go. Oh, yeah, the site is always going to be up to date, Justin. The site never stops. So.
Illegalcurve.com is the site that never sleeps. It's like
New York. It is. I unfortunately don't sleep either, as you can tell by the bags in my eyes. But the point is, 24/7, that site is updated, 365 generally. Actually, it's usually one weekend of the year where I'm completely off the grid. That's when I leave it to Ezzy and Drew to worry about it. But it is definitely going to be up to date.
Yeah. So when you can't access the site one weekend.
When the site crashes, it's usually because one of these two baboons.
That's when Drew puts up the site under construction graphic.
That's right. That's when I've done something to break the site and Dave Manuk's not around to help me out, but that's okay.
Just for folks who want to catch up on anything like Kevin Cheveldayoff's pressers from the draft or this week, including today's, Nate Schmidt, Brendan Dillon, Paul Stasny, we've got them all on the website, so you can go on.
Man, those were both great. I mean, Dillon was great, but Nate Schmidt.
Nate Schmidt's interview was one of the best interviews I've ever
had. He's one of the best personalities in the game. Murat's right. He does have that Dustin Byfuglien type of presence.
Well, I want to go to that sort of last question I asked Murat there. I mean, what I'm looking forward to with this Jets defense is that they're not going to be so passive, that this is going to be a defense that is confident in their abilities and confident in their skill set. And I think that's just going to permeate through the whole team. You know, they know that they've been holding on for dear life for the last, two seasons, really, with everything they do. They have to think in the back of their head. They couldn't play sort of free hockey because they knew, like mentally sort of free hockey, because they knew that they always had to protect themselves because they weren't good enough on the back end. Now that they could have, they know that they are, certainly quality defense up and down the top six of the Jets. I think that's going to filter through the entire team. And I think you're going to see a completely different style, similar to what we saw a few years ago. And you know, who's going to be the most happy about that, I think, is Connor Hellebuck. I mean, Connor Hellebuck, the numbers he's put up over the last couple of years, given the high-quality chances he's had to face, are incredible.
I still accept the fact that Hellebuck wasn't a Vezina finalist. Like, okay, yes, like Marc-Andre Fleury deserved to win the Vezina, sure. Andrei Vasilevskiy, yeah, he's one of the best goalies. Philip Grubauer, sorry. I mean, Connor Hellebuck deserved at the very least to be a finalist, but you're absolutely right, Drew. Sorry for cutting you off there, but
you're fine.
But look at what the biggest criticism has been for the last, not just year, but the last several years, maybe even 3 years, is that the Jets defense is not mobile enough, that the Jets defense is not good enough defensively, right? And they've addressed that. Like Nate Schmidt is a guy that moves the puck. Like all due respect to Tucker Poolman, like Nate Schmidt is more offensively inclined than Poolman. Pullman's got a good shot. He can jump up into the play. Schmidt is a smaller, you're not talking 5'8", but he's not as big as Brendan Dillon, obviously, who's 6'4", 220. Yeah. But Schmidt is a guy that, he can play power play. He can play a little penalty kill. Brendan Dillon can definitely play penalty kill. I don't think you're going to see him a lot on the power play, but these are both guys that are mobile.
Move the puck.
And you're right, Drew. I mean, you look at Dillon, you're like 6'4", 220. This guy's a lumbering, slow defenseman. No. You obviously didn't watch him with the San Jose Sharks or the Washington Capitals. This guy can move the puck, and he can also score goals. Like, nobody's expecting him to come in and score 15 goals, but he can score, 5 to 8 goals for you, no problem. He's a guy that has good offensive instincts. And, even though I don't know what his best offensive year was, it was probably in San Jose, 30 points or something like that.
Yeah,
but this is 22 points. This is a good defenseman.
But this past year, he had 19 points in 56 games played. And of those 19 points, that's all at 5-on-5. He's not getting power play time on the Washington Capitals. No. He's not going to get power play time.
There's a guy named John Carlson that does a lot of that there.
He's not going to get power, and Justin Schultz in Washington as well. He's not going to get power play time for the Jets, but he's a guy who can play and produce at 5-on-5. That's the difference between this coming year's Jets and the Jets of the last 2 years, where, all due respect to the Lucas Spezas and the Anthony Betettos and the Tucker Poolmans. Those guys are not going to help you get the puck out of your own zone. And when you have the offensive talent, Dave, that the
Winnipeg Jets, that.
Say that again.
Don't tell Jim Benning that.
Well, I mean, I don't understand that contract. I'm good for Tucker Poolman. I'm glad he got paid because I never begrudge a player to get paid. But, I mean, we all saw that Tucker Poolman is best suited as a third-pairing defenseman in the NHL. And why you're paying him $2.5 million a year for the next 4 years just doesn't make any sense to me. And I saw Benning today in his post free agency press conference say, well, there were 12 teams in on Tucker Poolman. Well, just because there were 11 other teams who were not properly evaluating a player doesn't mean you have to be the one that gives them $2.5 million. I mean, again, I don't begrudge Tucker Poolman. Tucker Poolman did a great job for the Winnipeg Jets, but Tucker Poolman was coming off a contract at $875 a year, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, he was underpaid.
He was a little bit underpaid, but I mean, what's Tucker Poolman really worth? Maybe he's worth, 3 years and maybe, $1.2 million a year, $1.5 million
a year. Sure. I just think that, his agent was a little eager when he signed that 3-year deal at essentially, league minimum.
He was just trying to crack into the NHL and he had a bird in the hand right there. And that's why he signed that 3-year deal. But I mean, you're not getting $2.5 million a year of value out of Tucker Poolman in Vancouver. And I hope I'm wrong. And I'd be glad if I'm wrong. But I mean,
hey, the NHL, the contract, guaranteed, Drew. So it doesn't matter. He's got 10 mil in the bank.
I know. And good for him. But it's crazy to me that, what he was getting with what Derek Forbert got from the Boston Bruins. I mean, these guys were guys who were, Forbert was a late signing on a 1-year deal, after, having a bit of, and he had a great season for the Jets. Can you imagine where the Jets defense would have been last year if Derek Forbert didn't play as well as he did for a lot of the season? But he's not worth the money they just signed him to. I mean, look,
it's subjective, right? And yeah, you're entitled to that opinion. And some people would say that, most players are overpaid, but in a flat salary cap. I mean, we knew that, the guys that are usually quote unquote overpaid are the free agents that are 27 plus, right? The kind of in between 27 and 30 year olds, whether it's defensemen or forwards, but that's kind of the premium that you have to pay, right? Like a team like LA, maybe they would have preferred to have Philip Deneau on a 3 or 4 year deal, but then you could have had offers and that's the whole game, right? Like that's, you have to give the extra few years. Look at Philip Grubauer in Colorado, right? Like Grubauer, what did he get? 6 years from the Seattle Kraken. Yeah. I'm sure that Joe Sakic would have been a lot more comfortable with 3 or 4 years, right? So it's just, that's the business side.
With a guy like Deneau or with a guy like Grubauer, the difference is that, those weren't guys who were
I wasn't comparing to Tucker Poolman. I'm just saying in general, I mean, some people like certain contracts better, but yeah, sure. I mean, that's a whole, there's an art and a science to that, right?
My point, I mean, bringing this sort of full circle and back to the Jets, Dave, is, you look at what, and we talked about this off the start of the show, you look at, how Kevin Cheveldayoff retooled the Jets lineup, in the Jets defense in particular, paying assets to acquire these guys, but he didn't overpay and then give them bad contracts that are going to saddle on the books. I mean, as long as, Brendan Dillon and Nate Schmidt continue to play similarly to how they've been for the last few years, and Schmidt's case sort of rebound to how he was with Vegas, the Jets are going to be fine paying them their salaries. Tucker Poolman, again, I don't want to pick on him, and Derek Forbert, and just because, recency bias, they're never going to play to a level that justifies the contracts that they just were handed. It's just probably not within them at their skill set at this point in their career. That's why I think Kevin Cheveldayoff deserves really a lot of praise for what he did for the Jets defense. Now, did he take 2 years too long to do it? Well, maybe he took a year too long to do it, but he did it. And now I guess he gets the credit for that because he's been getting all the criticism for the past couple of years.
I think what it ultimately comes down to, when you see the prices that were paid in free agency, that's a game you don't want to get into with Winnipeg and paying what, we call the Winnipeg tax. And I think if that's the case, there's no question about it. Like, you trade future assets. We talked about this. I mean, you need those. Of course, you have to restock the cupboard, as they say. You look at the Jets' forward prospect pool; it's shallow, especially Nathan Smith going back to Mankato next season. So you don't have a ton of prospects from a forward perspective. Henry Nikkanen staying over in Finland, we believe, for at least another year, maybe two, because he re-signed with a new Finnish club there. So you have a lot of good defensive prospects, but you don't have a ton of forward prospects. But at the end of the day, the AHL is good. Prospects are good. You're in the business of being in the NHL to win a Stanley Cup. These moves will put you in a position to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, it means you have to shave other areas and you're going to be tight. You know, maybe, look, Matthew Perreault is a guy who some think if you can bring him in on a reasonable deal, that's a guy who would go well with a David Gustafson, Christian Vesalainen, and a Jansen Harkins, a guy who's steady, who'd play on that fourth line for a reasonable number. He's been in Winnipeg 9 years. You know, it's not unreasonable to think Matthew Perreault could sign here for one more year with what he's seen. I mean, if I'm Matthew Perreault and I know I already like the situation, I'm thinking to myself, is it worth 500 grand more or another million? Easy for me to say, to move to a new situation because sure. I get an extra year. I don't know, but I'm just saying, like, I think that what this has done, and we heard it from Nate Schmidt, we heard it from Paul Stastny, the idea that you start to talk to guys about the idea of the winning, being part of that atmosphere and wanting to be part of it. And, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff, I think his line today was, they believe, so I believe in them. And I really do. I mean, he said it, right? You've got the GM of the Jets, who's usually pretty, like, tight-lipped, or when he's saying something, it's not necessarily saying much. And the reality is he was kind of gushing a little bit, right? Like, he was talking about how excited the players were that he was talking to, not just the ones he traded for or signed, but obviously I'm sure he's talking to Blake Wheeler. I'm sure he's talking to Mark Scheifele, Adam Lowry, Josh Morrissey. These guys are probably very excited as well. Not that they're going to denigrate the guys who left, but they realize what this opportunity is going to give this group for the next 2 years.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at this team, and I think that they're certainly within their window, and now that they have the defense to match to, you know, really assist and match to some degree the forward group, it's going to be a very interesting season for the Winnipeg Jets. You know, of all the teams in the NHL today, I think, you know, of all 32 teams, you can say without a shadow of the doubt that the Winnipeg Jets are better today than they were at the start of all this, you know, expansion draft, NHL draft, free agency nonsense. And that in and of itself is a feather in the cap for the Winnipeg Jets. Let's talk about the forward group. We haven't really spent a lot of time about the Paul Stastny contract, a 1 year deal for Stastny. The Jets bring him back. You know, is it more than they necessarily would have wanted to pay? Well, I mean, I don't think it's ever going to hurt you. Like I said, it's a 1 year contract. No such thing as a bad 1 year deal. $3.75 million. I think he fits perfectly in with what the Jets need to do. You know, you knew that there was a potential hole, either on the wing or up the middle, depending on what happens between Stastny and Dubois for the Jets. And, you know, Paul Stastny is just another year of a bridge potentially until a guy like Cole Perfetti might be ready if he's, you know, spends the year with the AHL's Moose.
Yeah, Stastny's move, like, it was overshadowed, right, by what happened with Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon. But I think it's a very significant signing, right? And obviously we know that, you know, Stastny's towards the end of his career, but we know how impactful he has been for this Jets team, not just, you know, in the last year, but, you know, in his first tenure here in 2018, right? So I think that's a really positive move. And I think, you know, what stands out to me about Stastny and bringing him back is his versatility, right? Like, we know he's a natural center, but he can really play wing on any line, and he's such a smart player. So I think that even though Schmidt and Dillon are the big acquisitions on the back end, I mean, I don't think that this move is any less significant. And the fact that he had, Dave, a big impact on Nate Schmidt coming over here, and he addressed it, I also think is very important, because it shows you, you know, that, you know, this is a team that wants to win now. And by acquiring these players, and obviously Stastny was last summer, but, you know, that says a lot to players like Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, players that are in their prime, Josh Morrissey, Connor Hellebuck. So yeah, absolutely, Drew. I mean, the move makes a lot of sense. And we weren't sure, you know, if Stastny would, you know, test the free agent market. But obviously, you know, he likes his situation enough that he was willing to accept a 1 year deal. I'm not sure if he was, you know, potentially seeking a 2 year deal, but I don't think, you know, we expected him to be seeking much more than 2 years. But I mean, he's a very important player for the Jets, because, as I mentioned, it's versatility. this is a guy that can play in really all situations, right? We saw him in the power play, you know, kind of playing that, you know, goal line, feeding the puck to whether it's Mark Scheifele in the slot or whoever. I mean, he's just such a smart player and also a very well-respected and well-liked guy in the room. So, you know, really nice to see Stastny coming back with the Jets on the one-year deal.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, you said it pretty well there, Ezzy. But I mean, you know, Dave, were you surprised that Stastny didn't at least go to see what free agency had to bring? I mean, he took the 1 year from the Jets. You know, was there a second year available? There was a lot of talk that a team like Colorado might have had interest in him. You know, maybe going back, you know, some another team sort of to the west of Manitoba. But he just decided, you know, that the 3.75 in the 1 year was good enough, and he was certainly glad to jump on it.
He is, but I think we're going to have someone else jumping on with us. So why don't we get that to that after we welcome Eric Comrie to the show.
We will do that. We're pleased to welcome the Winnipeg Jets goaltender, Eric Comrie, back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Eric, good evening. Thanks so much for joining us. How are things?
Things are great. I'm always happy to be back with you guys. I'm always happy.
It's a little warmer than the last time we had Eric on. It was mid-February last time we had him on. It's a 60-degree swing.
What's the weather like in Winnipeg today?
It's about 32 degrees Celsius, I think. About so nice and something. Hot. And yeah, where are you, Eric? I guess we'll ask that.
Irvine, California. It's 94 degrees here today, so it was hot today here.
Okay, so similar, not quite as hot as it, you know, in Winnipeg, but similar weather in Irvine, California. Certainly a nice place to be. A little bit of did you get to the ocean a little bit? A little bit of beach time today to celebrate?
No, I was golfing today. I got out for a little round of golf, and I actually skated this morning early. So I skated, worked out, went golfed a little bit. Golfed didn't go great today though, so that's too bad.
How did the skating go then?
Skating went really, really well, actually. I was really happy with that. I was very, very happy. We had a really good skate. We've actually, this whole week, we kind of doing like a little bit of a goalie skates. It's myself and three other goalies. We're doing like every single day, we're doing some different drills and different stuff with different goalie coaches here.
So I was going to say, so let's talk about that. That sounds a little bit interesting. You know, who is it that you're training with? Is it, or who are the coaches and sort of, you know, what goes on in these skates as you sort of obviously are preparing for the upcoming 2021-22 season?
No, for sure. So for like today, I have actually my guy with me was Dustin Wolf. He was played for USA World Juniors, and then he's going to play another Stockton or Calgary. The series, very, very exciting, talented goaltender. And we have myself, and then the goalie coaches are James Jensen and PJ Musico, who are both California guys. They're both great, great guys. And actually, our buddy Chase DeLeo is shooting on me. He's been out there all the days. He signed with New Jersey. I was really happy with him. He was going back and forth there. He wasn't sure he was going to sign, but he was really happy with New Jersey when they gave him the call. And then I don't know if you guys know Rhett Rakishani. He played a little bit in Islanders. He plays in Sweden. He's a good player. We've just been doing a bunch of different drills, different stuff to get kind of just getting back on the ice and getting back into the feel of things and really work on some good technical stuff before you start getting into the more the summer skates with the Ducks kind of thing.
Sounds like a good way to spend a Wednesday morning and then the golf course time after that. You know, Eric, obviously, you re-sign with the Jets, the one-year contract. I guess sort of walk us through that process. You know, did you think that this was going to happen? Were you expecting to go to free agency today? Obviously, you didn't end up doing that. So maybe sort of walk us through the process and how it came to be that you signed the one-year extension with the Jets.
I had no clue. I was in the dark the whole time. I wasn't dealing with anybody. I would just, I was just talking to my agent every once in a while, but I was like, you know what? I just want you to deal with it. I'm just going to do what I can do. I've done what I could do. I did everything I could. I mean, I had a good year. I worked hard every day I could. And that's all I could have done. I couldn't have dealt with, if they wanted to sign me, great. If they didn't want to sign me, then I have to live with that too. But I was just very, very fortunate that they wanted to sign me. But it's kind of funny, like you think you'd be more involved with it, but really you're done everything you can do. So you're just kind of let your agent and the team deal with it. And you're just going about your everyday business, working out and just preparing as if you really don't know the future. You're just trying to get better and get ready for camp, wherever that may be.
Eric, how satisfying is it for you, you know, to sign the contract, you know, Jets fans and Moose fans are so familiar with you and all the journey, you know, like we documented it on illegalcurve.com and we talked about it, you know, with you last February, you know, playing with the different, you know, franchises. Like, how nice is it for you to be, you know, sitting here in the summer? Well, you're not sitting here, you're sitting there in California, but how, you know, how nice is it for you that you can just focus, as you mentioned, on training and then, you know, looking forward to, you know, the 21-22 season with the Jets?
It actually makes it's a big difference because I'm very familiar with the city, the people, and the organization. So I know what I'm getting myself into. I've kind of gotten used to going to different organizations now, so I've gotten pretty good at meeting new people, becoming friends, and getting used to new systems. But it is very, very nice to be familiar. And I mean, for my girlfriend, for myself, Winnipeg's our second home. We truly do love going back to Winnipeg. We love the city. We love the people. I mean, it really doesn't get, you don't get much better city than that. I mean, you go, every time we go back, they're like, oh, this is fantastic. Everyone's so nice. Everyone's just happy to be here. And it just, and we truly do love it. We love being back there every chance we get.
No, Kevin Cheveldayoff in his press conference today talked about you as the backup and then essentially said, it's your time. You've earned it. You know, Connor Hellebuyck is back. You gave you the, you know, the seal of approval. And, you know, obviously you guys have a history with the Manitoba Moose. Wade Flaherty, he as well. So what does that mean to you from a confidence perspective? I know you don't lack for confidence, but from a perspective of, you know what you have to do. You have to, you're with the Winnipeg Jets. You're the backup to Connor Hellebuyck. But how much different from a mental standpoint is that going to be for you this year to kind of get started with that understanding?
No, it's always good to hear that. But I mean, once again, it's pro hockey. Things change. You got to earn your spots. You got to do your job. I mean, that's what I'm looking at. I've been going to day one of camp, looking to earn a job. Doesn't matter if they said it's yours or not. It's pro hockey. You got to go out there and earn that spot. You don't just get given anything. Doesn't matter who you are. You're never going to be just walking into a spot. I mean, Helly different. He's a Vezina Trophy winner. Doesn't matter how he does in camp. But for myself, it doesn't matter. I got to earn that spot. I got to earn that role. I mean, that's just the way pro hockey is. But I'm very excited to hear those comments. That gives me confidence. But I also know that, hey, I have to perform. I have to do my job. And I have to win games for the Winnipeg Jets.
Eric Comrie is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Eric re-signed with the Jets a one-year contract, and he's going to be the presumptive backup goaltender to Connor Hellebuyck. You know, Eric, you know, in the, you know, your frequent flyer miles that you've earned over the last couple of years, the truth is you haven't played a ton of hockey. You haven't really gotten into a ton of games over the last couple of years. You know, how difficult, we know it's been difficult because we've talked about that before, but sort of how does your mindset maybe change knowing that you're going to be sort of the backup goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets, all things being equal, and that you still probably won't get a ton of action, but that when you're called upon, the team is really counting on you to perform at that, you know, at that necessary level?
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's why took the job, though. I want to be ready for those games, and I have to be ready because the team needs those wins. It doesn't matter if it's a back-to-back or whatever it is. You have to go in there and you're expected to get 2 points for the team no matter what the situation is, and that's going to be my goal. And I haven't played a ton of games in the last little while, but I think I've gotten pretty good at especially last year. I mean, I went a long time between games, but every time I went into a game, I really played well the next time. And I'm just really confident that I can bring that into the next season.
Eric, I wanted to ask you about Pascal Vincent because he obviously has now left and he's an associate coach with the Columbus Blue Jackets, but he's been a coach of yours for so long. And just wanted to ask you, like, what kind of was going through your head, and did you have an opportunity to talk to him at all in this off season here? You know, because obviously he's had a, you know, big impact on your career specifically.
No, for sure. I was, I texted him right away, and as soon as I saw him get the job, I was really, really happy for him. I mean, he's earned it. He's done a very good job with the American League team down there, and he's developed a lot of good hockey players. And I think that he's going to do a very good job in Columbus. I know he's done. He was so good for us. Manitoba. I mean, you can't describe how much he made us, got our team get better, and how much he helped us. I mean, I know Dave was around there the whole time, and he really did see how much he helped that team and how much we grew. And he does a very good job of implementing a very good system. And I'm really excited to see what kind of role he has in Columbus, because I think he's going to do a very good job there.
You know, Eric, how much are you watching almost as a fan? I know you're going to be focused on yourself and training, but when you're seeing all of the moves that are happening in free agency, I mean, today was crazy, especially compared to last year, but just from a Jets perspective, because we know you've been developed by this organization. So when you see the Jets making the moves they did, you know, acquiring Brendan Dillon, acquiring Nate Schmidt, re-signing Paul Stastny, What does that to you as a player mean?
It's exciting. I mean, it's exciting. It's it means the team's really going for it. I think it's the time for the team to go for it. I think that we have a very good team. We have a very good chance of winning. We have a very good core group of guys, and I think that everyone knows, hey, it's Winnipeg Jets time, and I think Chevy knows, hey, it's time to pull some triggers, and he got some really, really high-name guys, and it's very, very exciting, and I think as a player, as a fan, we're very excited heading to the year, but I mean, it was kind of a whole crazy day today, wasn't it? It was kind of everywhere. I was like, wow, that came out of left field. Okay, that was kind of strange. I didn't see that one coming. That it was kind of happening all day today, and as Chevy made some unbelievable moves the day before, and then, I mean, today was just wild.
That it was. I think, especially among goaltenders, it saw something like maybe 14 different goaltenders switch teams or something like that. So it must be a little bit reassuring to get your name on that dotted line ahead of all this insanity.
So it was funny because I'm talking to my agent like a week before free agency. He goes, man, he goes, wow, there's a lot of goalies out there. It's like, it's going to be like, he goes, it's going to be tough to like for a lot of guys to get jobs and stuff. And all of a sudden I'm looking at today, I'm like, holy hell, there's not enough goalies around anymore. They're all gone. I'm like, oh, everyone's gone. They're all in different teams, different places, and they're all like spots are all filled up real quick this year.
Speaking of goalies, did you hear from Connor Hellebuyck when you signed your contract, or did you hear from any of the Jets players, you know, maybe, you know, saying, you know, welcome back, and, you know, this time you get to rent and you don't have to worry about moving around here, there, and everywhere?
Yes, I've texted quite a bit of guys. I'm not sure if Helly has reached out. He hasn't reached out yet, but Helly's, he doesn't have social media. Doesn't really find out things early. He'll find out at camp when everyone's back. Oh, these guys are here now. He doesn't really know anything going on until camp comes around. He's too busy fishing, probably.
You know, just kind of staying on that topic, because, you know, Dave mentioned this, you know, like during this interview here and then before you came on, like you guys know each other, like draft year is 1 year apart, you know, played in the American Hockey League, played in the NHL together. Like everyone obviously knows that he's, if not the best goalie in the world right now, he's one of the best goalies. But you just mentioned, you know, he likes to fish. He's not a big social media guy. Like, what are some other things that people, like, we know he's got a great sense of humor and he's really confident in his abilities, but what are some things maybe that people don't know about him? Because as we mentioned, like, and you know him really well personally.
Well, first of all, I didn't know he had a great sense of humor. That's new to me. But he's a really good golfer, by the way. Like, people don't realize he's a really good, really, really good golfer, and he's a really good. I mean, he likes, at least he tells me. I don't know much about fishing, but he tells me he's like the greatest fisherman ever, and he's gonna join the pro bass tour as soon as he's done. And that's really all he does is golf, fish, and take care of his dog, Henley. And he's a very, very simple man.
No, Eric, one of the things that you've had, and we talked to you about this before, was that idea of, you know, you worked with Rick St. Croix for so long with the Manitoba Moose. And then, you know, when you went on to Arizona and Detroit and New Jersey, you had the opportunity to work with different goaltending coaches. But what's it going to be like for you to work with Wade Flaherty? What's your relationship like with him? Obviously, you've had some connectivity to him, but what's your relationship like with him? And what will it mean to work with him at the NHL level?
Oh, Flats and I actually have a very, very close relationship. We've been really close for a long time. He was, I was with him every single day throughout the whole year this year. And I think that really helped me. Well, it helped me showcase what I could do. And I think it helped him see that, okay, I can trust in comms. And that was really good for myself. Just be around him every single day. We built a very solid relationship, and we see goaltending the same way. We agree on things and we look at things the same way. So it's a good relationship that we have, and we have a very good very good bond. And just we're very common in the way we very common in the way we see the game and how it should be played, kind of thing.
Eric Comrie, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Eric, what's your go forward plan for the rest of the summer? It's the end of July right now. You mentioned your training. You know, when do you begin to make your way to Winnipeg? And, you know, do you ramp up your training as you get closer to the start of training camp? Sort of, what does the month of August sort of have in store for you?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it definitely is going to ramp up. I've been skating actually quite a bit, more than I have in the past, just because we can this year, and last year we really couldn't skate. Yeah. So that kind of helps. And then we'll be definitely be ramping up training for sure. Training's been really going good so far, though. And I'll be skating a little bit more in the month of August, probably getting to more like summer type skates with more guys instead of more goalie specific stuff. So it's kind of more getting into like practice type scenarios. And then training has been going really, really well. I'm really happy with the way the offseason has been going in that part. I'm definitely a lot stronger than I was last year. And I was actually a lot stronger than I was the year before. So I'm really happy with how that's going. And I've done a really good job of maintaining and getting stronger. And so everything's been really good, going well. I can't really complain about anything. I'm just really happy with how everything's been going.
Well, if, The only complaint is the golf game. Then I think you're probably doing pretty well.
It's been pretty good too lately. At the start of the summer, it was really bad, but lately it's been coming around, and now it's. Today just wasn't very good. My partner wasn't very good today, though. I don't want to blame my partner, but my dad was my partner. He was kind of struggling today. I can blame him because he's family.
He was holding you back, right?
Well, it wasn't pretty, we'll put it that way.
And he's not within earshot, I assume.
No, he's not within earshot. He's not in Winnipeg. So he might be listening, though. He does like to listen to my interviews, so he might be listening. I'm sorry if he hears that.
That's awesome. And yeah. You know, I wanted to ask you about a guy like Nate Schmidt. Obviously, Eric, before we had you on, you know, that's obviously a huge move in addition to Brendan Dillon and Paul Stastny coming back. But, like, we were talking about, you know, just how big of a personality. And, like, do you have you come across him, like – obviously, you know a lot of people in the hockey world, but do you know him at all? And what do you think a personality like that, like he's one of the best personalities. There's a lot of great personalities in the game, yourself included, but like just when you saw that Nate Schmidt was going to be, you know, joining the others in the Minnesota Mafia, kind of what was going through your head? Because I imagine a lot of guys are going to be pumped up to have him, you know, in the dressing room and, you know, on the rink with them, you know, throughout the season.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I hear he's a great guy. I'm really happy to have him. I don't really know him personally. I don't know him too much, but I hear he's a really, really good person, really good guy. He's like just he's a great guy to be around. I know that Benner was with him in Vancouver for a little bit there, and there are a lot of people different guys that play with him throughout the years, and everyone says he's such a great guy. I'm really excited to meet him, and I mean, he's a huge addition. I mean, there's been some really, really big additions, and I'm really happy that I'm just really happy with how the team's looking right now. I mean, I think it looks really, really good. I think Chevy's done a very, very, very good job. And I think everyone in Winnipeg and everyone on the team could be really excited about this upcoming year.
So, Eric, I have a question for you. Is this the year that you and Chase DeLeo finally fulfill the dream and play in the NHL against each other?
I would like that to happen. I really, really would like that to happen. Against each other is going to be tough. We only played Jersey, what, two times?
Yep.
So we gotta make sure that both the chips fall into place. But it would be a former team of mine. But I mean,
well,
every team's a former team of mine now.
Apparently, someone was saying on Twitter that you are the only undefeated goaltender in New Jersey Devils history.
That is a true fact, actually. Someone told me that before, and I am the only. Martin Brodeur, probably the greatest goalie ever. But I do have one stat on him in New Jersey. I'm the only. I've never lost a game in New Jersey. Yeah, I mean it was a lot of fun to play there. It was great. I mean, it was great. I mean, I got lucky to get that game in and get that win. I was really happy about it, and I'm just hopefully I get to play again against them next year, maybe.
No, Eric, did you end up getting your helmet? Because I remember last time we had you on, you were really happy with the helmet, but I think you left it in New Jersey. So did you end up getting it back?
Funny, actually, I never got the helmet back, but the helmet, what it was actually it was my Winnipeg Jets helmet,
right?
But it was wrapped with pictures on it, so I never got it back. I would like to get that back because it was a cool design, just because I mean my idol when I grew up, Martin, but I used to cut my hair like him and do everything like him, so he was like my idol. So having my mask was kind of special for me.
Well, we got to get it back,
Eric,
then.
We'll let you. Yeah,
well I would like
come it. On Drew, get on.
I'm
it
trying to get someone to tape to paint it for me. I gotta do that, actually. But I mean, I can't look back. I gotta look to the future. I gotta look towards Winnipeg Jets stuff only now, right?
I was gonna say, now you got to get it wrapped. You got to get it painted with Jets colors on it, or something
that. Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
You've
got... for sure.
It'll look a little odd if you're sporting a Devil's helmet at the start of the season, but that's obviously won't be an issue.
No, for sure.
You know, Eric, we'll let you go on this one. It's been a bit of a circuitous route. You know, you were drafted by the Jets, you know, 8 years ago, back in 2013 in the second round. You know, just from our perspective.
We were there. It seems like yesterday, 2013 in Newark.
Yeah. It does seem like yesterday, doesn't it? Holy smokes. Yeah. Wow. We're getting old, aren't we?
We are getting old. I don't know how that happened.
Hey, Eric, we were there when you were just a little
you're
a young
buck. Eric, you're still young. We're old.
But I haven't aged at all, though.
It's true.
Wish we could say the same.
You're a nice guy, Eric. Just strictly for lying to our faces like that. That's all we ever appreciate. That's a very nice gesture on your part. You know, it's like I said, it's been a bit of a circuitous route to get to this point, but you know, I can speak for Dave and Ezzy, I'm sure. We're happy for you. You know, you're one of the good guys in the game, and we're looking forward to seeing your success here in Winnipeg come next season. Thanks for joining us this evening. We'll let you get back to the driving range. Maybe take your dad with you, see if you can hit it a little bit straighter next time. And everything else. We look forward to seeing you here in Winnipeg.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, guys. You have a great day.
Cheers, Eric.
Take care, Eric. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
There he goes. Winnipeg Jets goaltender Eric Comrie joining us on the program.
What a beauty.
He is a beauty. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about that interview, talk more about the Jets. You're right. He is a beauty. Just a very, young man. Thank you, Ezzy. You're too kind. You're listening. You're watching. You're chatting. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and social media platform. 20 minutes after 9, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Eric Comrie is just a nice guy. You know, sometimes it's that simple that, you know, Eric Comrie is just a nice guy, and you can see it. It just radiates through him anytime he speaks to the media, anytime that he talks to us, certainly. Just a nice guy. And, you know, you don't root for teams in this business when you're in the member of the media, but sometimes you root for people, and Eric Comrie is one of those guys you want to root for.
Well, ask Dave. I'm sure, you know, he got more personal messages and you know, social media mentions and everything like that when the Jets signed Eric Comrie. And obviously there was a lot of other things going on, not just here in Winnipeg, but across the NHL. I mean, the amount of people that were happy for Eric is overwhelming, right? Because he's been such a good, not only a good person, but, you know, he's a good goaltender. Like that's what stands out to me. Like, he's earned, you know, the right to be an NHL backup goaltender. And you can say whatever you want in terms of, you know, whether the Jets should have kept Lauren Brossoit or anything like that. But, you know, they're going with Eric Comrie as the backup goaltender. But I agree with you. He is a really good person. And we always like having him on.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, he's just, I always call him an affable guy, and it's true, right? He's just got a very easy nature, and he's always good when we have him on to do a show or when we want to interview him. And he's engaging. And I'm not joking when I say this. I've covered his entire career, essentially, obviously, that when he's been in Winnipeg. I wasn't flying to St. John's. I didn't pay attention.
We have been covering his career, Dave.
Whoa. Sorry. I meant mostly his Moose stuff.
Dave can say I. I'm fine with Dave saying I there. You've watched him closer than anybody.
There's no I in a legal curve.
There clearly is an I in a legal curve. It's literally the first letter in a legal curve.
Drew, there's only like 35 minutes left in the show, okay? I am savoring every single second here.
That's good, because I'm not talking to you for the next 5 weeks.
Well, even though, you know, we're going to have a full month off here, I mean, we might pop up because you just can't get rid of us. We're like cockroaches. But I mean, like, we love every single minute of this, right? Like, even though, you know, the NHL draft is hectic, as Dave said, it's our favorite time of the year.
Yeah, there's no
question. So, I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm going to get Drew going as much as I can here in the last 35 minutes.
Two things that I thought of. Number one was, you know, that idea of Comrie. I think I've only seen him one time. I've ever seen him get mad when an unnamed former prospect hit him in the head during practice, and he was pissed about that.
Oh, yeah. Goalies don't like that, Dave.
That's the only time I've ever seen him get pissed off. That was one. And then the other thing I was going to say is, you know, it's funny just to go back to the draft in New Jersey when we were there and he was drafted. And it's like, it's weird because on one level, it does feel like it was yesterday. And it does. You go back and you look at the pictures and you see how, I mean, Eric Comrie's almost like Cole Perfetti in that regard. Like, it's one of those guys that probably will always look like he's 19. But it's still funny to go back and realize like how young he was when he got drafted by the Winnipeg Jets. So definitely a walk down memory lane when you've seen these guys that you've been covering for, you know, since they started within the organization. And now they're in his mind, you know, reaching the point of his career where he's trying to solidify what he'll be in the NHL.
Let's talk about the Jets and the remainder of the offseason priorities. Obviously, we know that the big three involve Pionk, Kopp, and Logan Stanley, and getting contracts done with those three. You know, the next, you know, Logan Stanley is, shouldn't be that complicated. Andrew Kopp is obviously likely to be the most complicated one of the three. But, you know, I don't know if you guys heard this. It was at the tail end of tonight's broadcast on TSN. Right before the sort of the frenzy show ends and they go into SportsCenter.
So I didn't watch 1 minute of any frenzy.
Okay, well, there you go. So you guys wouldn't have seen it. It was right before about 5 o'clock tonight. And they were going through all the insiders and talking about some of the moves and everything else. And Darren Dreger said something very interesting. He said that it's his belief that Kevin Cheveldayoff is not done and that he has some irons in the fire of relative significance, which certainly caught me off guard, because, you know, usually at this point in time, if you're the Jets and, you know, most of these teams, you're looking around and you're saying, okay, you got to figure out your RFAs, and maybe you're signing some depth guys to 1 year deals. You know, we mentioned like a guy like Matthew Perreault might come back. You know, it was, you know, random time where we got guys like, where the Jets signed guys like Trevor Lewis or Nate Thompson last offseason. That's the kind of guy you're thinking about at this stage of free agency. But, you know, for, and take it for what it's worth, but Darren Dreger did say that it wasn't necessarily a small move that Kevin Cheveldayoff was working on, that he speculated there would still be a more significant move. Just wanted to, you know, pass that along. What do you think the Jets are looking at for the rest of their offseason? Because really, it's only, you know, 5-6 weeks until training camp starts.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And I agree with you, Drew. I mean, after, you know, Chevy trades for Nate Schmidt, he trades for Brendan Dillon, signs Paul Stastny to that 1 year contract, you're thinking like, okay, aside from the RFAs, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. Neil Pionk, Andrew Kopp, Logan Stanley, Tucker Pullman signed with Vancouver, sorry. Okay. You're thinking that, you know, yeah, like maybe there's going to be a player or two, like forwards that are signed, or maybe like an eight professional tryout offer, as you mentioned, like Trevor Lewis got and turned that into a contract. I mean, the obvious one to me, and I imagine Dave would agree with this, I mean, you're not moving Neil Pionk. I mean, the Jets organization is really happy, you know, with Neil Pionk. So he's going to be signed. Mm-hmm. Logan Stanley's not going anywhere. Andrew Kopp is the obvious one that would be moved just because of what's happened previously with contracts. Like Andrew Kopp is not signing, the Jets are not signing Andrew Kopp to a 1 year deal. I don't think anybody thinks that. It makes zero sense. It just, period, right? So get that out of there. So, and they're not sure, he's not looking for a 2 year deal or a 3 year deal. I would have to believe, and I don't have any insider knowledge, I'm in fact an outsider, as you guys know. Love to spend times in the woods. You know, like I have to get a few more jokes in too, because Naomi doesn't think I'm funny. So you guys are pretty much the only ones left that find me funny, right? So, I mean, yeah. Kopp, humor is you. Yeah, exactly. You find me mildly funny. But yeah. Kopp is the obvious one here, boys. Like this is the obvious one. And that would be significant. You know, speaking of draft and develop, I mean, Kopp's been with only one NHL organization. I mean, this is a guy that's had a big impact during the regular season and the playoffs. And I don't care what anybody says. I think Kopp is a very valuable player. I don't think he's replaceable. I don't think anybody in the Jets system can do what Andrew Kopp can do. I think players can develop into that, but he's that Swiss Army knife that can play on the first, second, third, fourth line. He can play center. He can play wing. He can play on your penalty kill. He's not going to play a ton on the power play, but he can play on the power play. So, I mean, this is really a guy that can do it all. So if he is moved, that's significant. As far as any other players, like there's nobody really, Drew. Like I don't see the Jets moving anybody. Like I don't see a Kyle Connor trade coming. Like maybe, you know, it is coming, but like just look at the defense. I don't see, you know, Chevy bringing in any more top four defensemen. I mean, you can only have so many top four defensemen. No. And Ville Heinola right now, you would have to think is kind of number seven on the depth chart and is a good candidate to spend a good part of the season in the AHL. Now, do I agree with that?
Hang on. Let me stop you right there. And let's talk about Ville Heinola, because you're right. It seems like, you know, the Jets that Logan Stanley would be, if you were penciling out a depth chart right now, you know, Logan Stanley would be ahead of Ville Heinola. Now, can that change in the course of training camp? Yeah, I think it could. But if you're Ville Heinola right now, aren't you chewing glass a little bit, Dave, over sort of this offseason and how, it was Craig Heisinger who said to you that, you know, Ville Heinola was almost too good for the AHL at times last year. And then he sort of continues to be stuck in this, you know, sort of limbo situation now, with the caveat being that usually over the course of an NHL season, you need close to 10 defensemen at various times due to injury and everything else that might happen. But if you're Ville Heinola, I would assume you're entering training camp with more than just a bit of a chip on your shoulder.
Okay, so that's fine. So what did Eric Comrie say? When I asked him, I said, Eric, what does it mean for you to find out that, you know, you're basically being anointed the backup of, you know, to Connor Hellebuyck? He goes, well, that's nice, but I still have to earn that spot. Mm-hmm. So nothing is stopping Ville Heinola from coming into camp with a Burnus saddle, provided he rides horses, and, you know, saying, I'm going to dethrone Logan Stanley. And nobody, look, the reality is we know that Josh Morrissey and Neil Pionk and Dylan DeMello and Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon are essentially your five of six.
Yeah.
So there's one spot. There's one spot available. So we know that Johnny Kovacevic, who leaps and bounds what he was able to do from his first year as a pro to his second year as a pro, 6'5", right shot defenseman. I've got all the time in the world for him, but I really like the idea of him starting in the AHL. Fine. Dylan Sandberg, same thing. I really like the idea of him in his second year as a pro, starting in the AHL, paired up with Kovacevic, Twin Towers of Power, I was jokingly calling them last year. They'll be good in the AHL. Not an issue with that. But if you're Ville Heinola, and again, one of those guys could try to do it, but it seems more unlikely for those guys, the path at least. But Ville Heinola has as good a chance to dethrone Logan Stanley if he has a phenomenal summer. Nothing is stopping him from blowing the doors off the place and taking a spot. And if you take a spot because you've earned it, well, then you platoon. I mean, it's not unheard of to have them platooning, and you're not going to want, look, either you're going to have them playing or platooning, but not sitting. You can't have him sit. He's too good a prospect. And from a development perspective, how much better is your defense down in the Moose with Sandberg, Heinola, and Chisholm? You know, and I'm sure there's about six other guys on the left side I'm forgetting right now, but those are your primary prospects that are going to be lining up on your left side. So it's not the end of the world. I know people, again, we live in an instant gratification society and people want everything to work out today. The truth is, having prospects marinate a little bit isn't the end of the world. If he's too good for the AHL, then he can't earn a spot in the NHL, well, that's a problem. So let him, if he has to, go back and be, you're 100% right, Drew. It's no question that it could burn him. You know, he did that Bernie thing where he was sitting out in the cold on his Instagram. I don't have a problem with that. I think it's fine. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to earn your spot. Eric Comrie said it best. You know, here's a guy who has probably worked harder than most in terms of trying to earn that spot. And even when he's, quote, given it because of the cap situation, he knows that, like, the likelihood is Eric Comrie is your backup because Arvid Holm, who Kenny Weeb from the Jets 2017 sixth round pick from Sweden said, Kenny said he's going to be here in North America this year. Mikhail Burden, they're both waiver exempt. So you know that the Jets are going to be much more likely to send them down than they are to send Eric Comrie, obviously, because of the waiver situation. So the reality is, even though he knows that's the situation, he's not going to take it lightly. And I think Ville Heinola, if he comes in and he blows the doors off the bus, whatever it is, he could earn the spot over Logan Stanley. It's not as if Logan Stanley was good, but it's not as if he's secured it and he's a lock in that third pairing role.
Let me just say this one thing. You know, with the size that Brendan Dillon brings to the table, which is obviously something that Logan Stanley was really the only Jets defenseman of any significant size last year. You know, Brendan Dillon is a big boy. He you know, brings a lot of size, and which that was certainly an asset that Logan Stanley brought to the table that may not be as significant as it was last year with the Jets had a much smaller defense.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I agree with Dave. There's a logjam right now when you bring in, you know, Dillon and Schmidt, you know, and obviously Forbort and Pullman aren't back, but you know, it creates a logjam when you have, as Dave mentioned, left side defensemen like Sandberg and Heinola that eventually want to graduate. But you know, the reality is, guys, like Jets fans are just gonna have to accept the fact that, you know, there is a chance that Heinola, you know, is a third pairing defenseman and plays more than Stanley. I think that's less likely. And I think that there's a good chance that, you know, your third pair could be Logan Stanley and Dylan DeMello. But Jets fans have to accept that, you know, Heinola could spend some time in the American Hockey League. It might not be the whole year. It could be the whole year. But he's 20 years old here. And I am at the top. I want to be like a gold member of the Ville Heinola fan club. Dave has watched him more at the AHL level. But whenever I've watched him either with the Jets or playing for Finland at the World Juniors, like this guy is... like his skill set, it's sky high. Like he's going to be a really good defenseman, but you do have to remember, as Dave mentioned, even though people want Heinola with that Jets jersey on scoring goals, I mean, he's 20 years old. Like, you know, we talked about it earlier, like 20 years old is very young. I mean, especially for us old farts, Drew's about to turn 40 and really be washed up here. I'm still a young 39, but like, you know what I mean, guys? Like that's just the reality here. When you're a team like the Jets, and again, like Dave said, let's not right now put all of these names on a whiteboard and think that these aren't going to be changed. Like it's not set in stone here. Like let's just be happy with the depth that this team has right now. And when you acquire Dylan and Schmidt, your depth is much better. Like, Dylan and Schmidt are better than Forbort and Pullman, all due respect. Nobody's, I think, going to argue with that. I mean, these are legitimate defensemen who are in the primes of their careers at 30 years old, right? So I think that's what you have to kind of just look at it. Don't look at it like, you know, Ville Heinola is being robbed of a spot in the top six here. We don't know that that's the case. I mean, there's training camp to come here, as you mentioned, Drew. It's going to come really quickly in, 6 weeks or so. But to Dave's point, Logan Stanley deserves, to be in the NHL just as much as anybody else. So if it turns out that, Stanley is in the top six and Heinola is kind of, on the outside looking in, that doesn't mean that Heinola, doesn't have a bright future ahead with the Jets. Heinola is going to be a great defenseman for the Jets, unless obviously they trade him. I don't see that happening ever. Right. Certainly not in the near future, but I think everybody just needs to take a bit of a deep breath. These moves that were made by Chevy, it's not like he made these moves and he's thinking, oh, okay, yeah, like, Heinola, he's on the back burner now. I mean, he knows how good of a defenseman he has in Heinola. And like I said, I think, you just have to be a little bit patient here. I know it's tough when you have a D prospect like him, top D prospect at the 2021 World Juniors. But to Dave's point, I mean, he might end up playing many more games in the NHL than we think.
And the one thing I just wanted to jump in and piggyback off of what Ez was just saying is, we also don't know if guys are going to switch sides, right? Guys might see an either easier avenue into the NHL on the right-hand side. And while Ville Heinola didn't find it super comfortable making that switch, Dylan Sandberg actually did. Dylan Sandberg played 5 games on the right side when the Moose right side was decimated with injury or as they had call-ups. So just it's one thing to be aware of. He played 5 games in a row. He may have played more in total. I just was looking at a set when I remembered he had moved over to the right side, and he had 5 straight games playing on the right side for the Manitoba Moose. So again, these guys generally like to play on the side, but look at Nate Schmidt, guys. And he was asked about it. I think Kelly Moore asked him about it, that idea, or I think it was Kelly, but the idea of moving over from, your left shot guy. And Nate Schmidt said, there was a guy in the NHL. I don't remember who it was. Who was it? I think you're usually pretty good with this stuff. Anyways, there was someone in the NHL. He's like, I'm not getting that spot. So if they're going to ask me, can I go play the right side? Yeah, I'll go play the right side because that's my way to the NHL. Dylan Sandberg has already kind of done that a little bit with the Moose. We'll see if he continues down that vein. So maybe that's an easier avenue, or maybe just adds to his versatility. So that's one thing to keep aware of as well, is that there's nothing that precludes these guys from adapting their game to how they best see fit. And so, like I said, I think it'll be very interesting to see what happens. But at the end of the day, the Detroit Red Wings didn't do so badly for many years by stockpiling guys in Grand Rapids and then recalling them when they needed to in order to win championships. And I'm just saying that, at the end of the day, guys, as Drew said, and he's 100% right, you're going to have 10 defensemen generally who you're going to need to rely on. Now, the Jets got lucky last year. They didn't actually have a ton of injuries. Yeah. But the truth is, that's not always the case. And that sometimes, remember, all of a sudden, Nelson Noje is playing in the AHL with the Manitoba Moose and actually was a healthy scratch on a Saturday night. Okay, that needs to go. Yeah, and
we're getting spammed is what's happening.
Okay,
right now,
and so next thing you know, Nelson Noje is playing in the NHL. So I think what it comes down to, boys, is that you're just sitting there going, you can't predict the future. All we can see is, and as he said it, you have a whiteboard, you may as well erase it because it could be different by game 2. So there's no predetermined order. We can conceptualize it. We can write it. I mean, I wrote it in the story when we talked on elitecurve.com about what the Jets defense could look like. But the reality is, while we may think that, anything can change in hockey. So there's lots of opportunities potentially for guys who are excelling. Like I saw some of the comments in the before this comment section went a little crazy. But yeah, the reality is that, playing in the AHL, I know people lament it, but it's not a bad thing. There's lots of guys, 80%, I think, no, it's 86% of NHLers have played in the AHL. Not the end of the world to do it.
You're right.
I just saw the comment that made Drew react. But
yeah, that was a funny comment, Mal Parise, but we'll deal with that later.
Mal Parise is on fire tonight.
Yeah, that was quite funny. Let's sort of look at the central division, because that's where the Jets are going to be back this year. Colorado, they had a yeah, thank God we're back in the, they're back in the Central, and you don't have to see the same five teams over and over.
Again. I enjoyed watching Ottawa 45 times, but come on.
Let's look at the Jets competition. I mean, it's interesting. You know, Colorado, are they better than they were? I think they probably are fairly well,
what's
even.
What's happening with the goaltending there? I mean, to me,
they got Darcy Kemper.
They did. Okay, I was just going to say Darcy Kemper makes a lot of sense. So
they got Darcy Kemper. It cost them a first round pick, defensive prospect Connor Timmins, and a conditional third round pick. But which is, I think, the condition on it is if the Avalanche win the Stanley Cup, they get that third round pick. So it's a first round pick and Connor Timmins for Darcy Kemper.
Okay, well then did that just happen in the last hour?
No, it happened about 3 hours ago. But you know, who's counting? They re-signed Gabriel Landeskog after it looked like they weren't going to do it. So you know, you could say probably that they're status quo to how they were. If you give an equivalency to Grubauer and Kemper, and you know, for argument's sake, I'm willing to do so.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Kemper's a great goalie.
Yeah, you know, St. Louis. Well, St. Louis is going to be without Vladimir Tarasenko. That seems, you know, fairly evident.
It might even be worse.
Say that again.
Or they may be with them, which could even be worse.
Wow.
They can't get rid of them.
If they can't get rid of them, so St. Louis again, you know, maybe they take a little bit of a step back. They didn't really do much in terms of free agency today that immediately comes to my mind. I mean, Chicago did lots of stuff. I mean, Chicago did, you know, they obviously got Seth Jones. They traded away Duncan Keith.
That'll be interesting.
I still don't understand the Brent Seabrook for Tyler Johnson move. Like, I get it, but it's still kind of weird to me. But
the question for Chicago really is whether Fleury will report.
Will Marc-Andre Fleury report? If he doesn't report,
George, I was just going to say, that's another move. Like, off air, I was saying to Dave, like, with all of the moves that have been happening around the NHL, the Alex Ovechkin 5-year contract, it's like, nobody was even talking about that. Same thing with the Marc-Andre Fleury move. Like, that was significant, guys. Like, he found out about it on social media.
Yeah, they didn't handle that one. Well,
all the sword in his back pictures were pretty funny.
Yeah, they did not handle that one. They did not handle that one well at all in Vegas. I mean, you look at some of the other teams in the – first of all, the Central has Arizona now, and Arizona is going to be the worst team.
Terrible.
In the
Nashville's going to be terrible too.
Well, Nashville does – yeah, Nashville is not a particularly good team. They didn't really do much today that I can think of. I mean, they're you know, they lose Ryan Ellis. I mean, they sort of – you know, they quickly acquire Nolan Patrick, and then they trade Nolan Patrick, and they get what's his name? Who they get?
They signed Mikael Granlund.
They got Cody Glass, and they re-signed Mikael Granlund. I mean, Nashville's nothing to write home about.
Granlund's also not the same player that he once was. I mean, he's okay. I don't know.
Arizona is tanking for Shane Wright.
Oh yeah, Arizona is undoubtedly going to be the worst team in the NHL. I mean, Mikael Granlund is. I thought they overpaid him for another 4 years at $5 million. But you know, Nashville again. You know, they have some nice pieces, but really their defensive depth isn't what it once was either. Especially after that Ellis trade. I mean, they got Josi and Ekholm, and you know, Philip Myers is okay, but he's not. You know, he wasn't Ryan Ellis and Shea Weber in their prime. So that's a team that's certainly in flux. You look at the Dallas Stars. I mean, I like what Dallas did in going out and getting.
That was
who
I was just going to mention. Yeah, that was a big move. I mean, that's a huge move.
Yeah.
He's getting
Ryan
paid.
Suter. Yeah, he's getting paid, you know, 3. I mean, it's 4 years, which you don't really love. But, you know, 3.65 is, you know, not a terrible number. That's a good defense. But again, there's not a lot of depth there. You know, you got some goaltending questions with Ben Bishop's health. And, you know, it's Khudobin. Well,
there's going to be a trade there. I mean, one of those guys is going to be traded.
Well, if Bishop can play, I mean, I think to me, he's an LTIR candidate. So, I mean, if he's not, or there's going to be a trade, right. You can't have, you know, $10.2 million wrapped up in three different goaltenders. They got Braden Holtby, presumably to be their backup.
Yeah.
You know, who's the other team? Is there another team?
Minnesota.
Yeah, that's in Minnesota. So what did Minnesota do? Minnesota didn't really dip their toe very much in there. I mean, they're relying on Cam Talbot and Kaapo Kähkönen again to be good. They got Dmitry Kulikov. They signed him to a 3-year deal. Pardon me, to a 2-year deal. He gets $2.25 million per season. I mean, this Central Division is
Alex Goligoski was the
Alex Goligoski. Yeah. They get 1 year, $5 million.
$5 million was a little higher than I thought, but I mean, look at he's a guy that can play big minutes, and so Goligoski, guys, essentially replaces Ryan Suter. He's not as good as Ryan Suter, I mean, Ryan Suter is one of the best American defensemen of all time. So, I mean, it's really tough to, you know, really replace him. But in terms of minutes and role and just being a veteran guy, like, he wasn't going to get like 4 years like Suter, but just $5 million is a little bit high. But and Kulikov, that's going to be a third pairing guy for you, right? But I mean, yeah, I think Minnesota, I mean, clearly they're going younger, and Kaprizov is Kaprizov, I should say. I mean, that's going to be an interesting one. He's going to get a lot of money, but you know, I think the issue there is
in Russia.
Well, I mean, but the issue is, Dave, like, you're paying him on one good year. Kind of reminds you a little bit of Panarin, right? I'm not sure if he got the big deal or what the contract status was, but I remember either 1 year or 2 year he got a big deal. But, I mean, yeah, I would say right now, I mean, the Jets and the Avalanche are probably, you know, they've separated themselves a little bit. And I'd probably say that, you know, Dallas and Minnesota are right up there with, you know, Chicago. But right now, it doesn't look as strong of a division as it was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And I agree, like St. Louis, like, have they taken a step back, or are they kind of just going to be similar? Like, I think without, you know, really knowing what other moves are coming, you can't really say, you know, are any of these teams much better? Like, I would say Dallas is better just because, you know, bringing in Ryan Suter will always make your defense better. And you've already got Haskin in there, and you've already got Klingberg and Esselindil. Dallas actually has probably still one of the best defenses in the division, if not the league. Yeah. And you're strong in goal. Say whatever you want about Braden Holtby. I mean, he's still, you know, capable of giving you, you know, 25 to 30 games, right? So,
he's been pretty lousy for the last couple of years going back to Washington.
Well, I mean, he's a backup. I mean,
he's an NHL backup.
So, sorry, I've always liked Holtby.
The big move that St. Louis made was acquiring Pavel Buchnevich. He got him from the New York Rangers.
He signed him for four years.
He was an RFA.
He's not going to necessarily make your team that much. He's a good player, but the thing is, like,
he's a replacement for Tarasenko.
That's what I'm saying. And you're going to move Tarasenko out, and his offense is going to be partially replaced by Buchnevich, but you're also going to lose Jaden Schwartz, right?
They already lost Jaden Schwartz.
I'm behind here. So, like, my point is, Drew, like, I don't think you could say with certainty Seattle is much, pardon me, St. Louis, so many teams here. St. Louis is better. Like, if I was picking teams based on the rosters now, the four teams maybe that come out are probably the Jets, the Avalanche, the Wild, and the Stars.
Yeah, I would say that I don't have any, you know, and we'll obviously get deeper into that closer to the start of the season. But you look at the Central Division and you look at the teams that have, you know, sort of, you know, treaded water, the teams that have diminished or the teams that have improved. The Jets are in my books, really the only team that I would say has really taken a step forward in that division at this stage, you know, after, you know, almost 10 hours after free agent, or 11 hours, I guess, after free agency opened. The Jets are the team that has done the most to improve their fortunes in the Central Division.
Chicago, now they did,
Chicago's better, but they're still a very weird team. You look at that roster in Chicago.
They acquired Marc-Andre Fleury, Drew, and we're not even sure if he's going to be he's going to be a goalie there. So yes, I agree. It is weird.
I mean, look, I think what it comes down to, though, boys, is that you're looking at a Jets team that did the smart thing. They put the phone down on free agency day. I mean, every year we talk about, oh, my God, it's so crazy. And every year, how many of these moves really end up having huge impact, right? And so, and we look at the contracts, and they always end up burning you. They always end up like, you know, it's always an overpay. And we talk about this. Like I said, I mentioned earlier, that idea of a Winnipeg overpay. So, I mean, if you have to even pay more on a day like today when the prices are even higher, like it's crazy. That's why to give away draft picks, and you don't do that willy-nilly. Look, we've seen what some of these draft picks have become, right, for the Winnipeg Jets. But at the end of the day, you have proven assets. A proven asset is a much more significant thing for a Winnipeg Jets team that is in win-now mode for the next 2 to 4 years. When you have Connor Hellebuck in his absolute prime, when you have a Vezina goaltender, and you have if you're the Winnipeg Jets, why do you need to make a big move? Like, if you think about it, you're going back to that idea of what you're talking about from TSN. The only reason I know it's cap wise, but the only person who really makes sense is Andrew Kopp. Otherwise, it doesn't make a lot of sense for this Jets team. Given now you're not trading away one of your snipers. Because the whole point of why you have those snipers is because you're maybe going to trade one of them for a defenseman. You don't need
What's
to do
your
that
definition
anymore.
Of a big move, Dave? That's why I said Andrew Kopp. Like, wouldn't that be a big move?
No, I agree with you. I think like that to me would be the big move that they must have been talking about. That's the only thing I could think of because from a Jets perspective, if you don't think you're going to sign him and you think you're going to like only get a 1-year deal.
There's only two options, right?
Yeah. So then realistically, then you kind of have to make a decision there because you don't want to walk away and lose an asset. We see how many teams, you know, lose. I mean, even the Leafs, you know, with the Hyman situation, like they could have just said, give us one or two picks and we'll give you that extra eighth, you know, that eighth year. And they said, no.
That like decision didn't make any sense.
So certain instances when teams make decisions, you're kind of left scratching your head going, what are they doing? But
speaking of like, giving him that eighth year, people want a shirt here. Let's give the people a shirt, Dave.
All right. Well, let's give the people what they want, Ezzy. We'll give the people what they want. Now, we've got two shirts because there was one from last show, which you cut out early, threw off the momentum. So that shirt is going to –
He's good now, but I had to go.
No, that's okay. We're happy.
Family first. We understand.
The first winner of the T-shirt,
T. Kona Pauly.
Now, T. Kona Pauly, I since I've been doing special deliveries, which is probably ending after the show, but I've been doing special deliveries. So maybe even though the Whistle Pig is no longer a thing, maybe I'll meet you at the Whistle Pig and we can go to the you can go there and I can give you your Illegal Curve T-shirt. But the second shirt,
I have to put a flamingo on there for T. Kona Pauly.
You will get in touch with T. Kona Pauly. Is that how it works?
That's what I was going to say. So what T. Kona Pauly, I'm going to need you to. It's a little.
Dave
weird,
will find you. Don't find Dave.
You got to find me. So you're going to send a DM either to the Leo Curve account or to the IC Dave account because it's a little difficult trying to communicate through the subscription on YouTube. And then number two,
second shirt,
second shirt, going to Nicole J.
I like it.
Wow. Congratulations, yeah. Nicole J and T. Kona Pauly.
And just in case anybody's wondering if this is if we're just giving away shirts in theory, you've got proof right here. Tracy, who probably is wearing her shirt as we speak and says the shirts are really, really nice. I met Tracy. It was a great see Tyler, who obviously is familiar with Transcona, says the Whistle Pig is gone. But I met Tracy. She was really happy to get the shirt. It's really nice to meet her. And we've got two more winners. And I'll happily, you guys can send messages, like I said, to Legal Curve or to me at IC Dave, and we'll coordinate and get you those shirts.
And we want something that looks like this all summer. Yeah, send us some pictures. Rock those shirts with pride.
Oh, exactly. And Sandy, who also has a shirt, says the shirt is great.
And for everybody else who did not get a shirt,
yes,
our store where you can purchase Illegal Curve merchandise, such as the shirts that we're wearing, is going to be available in the coming weeks. So in time for the start of the 2021-22 season,
that's right.
You will be able to purchase a shirt all on your own. If you ask nicely, we'll be glad to autograph it for you. And,
it's funny you should mention that. Read the quote by T. Will here. I put it up on the chat.
No, T. Will would be more like $3.99.
T. Yeah. Will says you can buy the shirt for $19.99 or you can buy one signed by Ezra for $14.99. I like
that. That's true. That's a funny comment, and it's also very true. So stay tuned for the launch of the Illegal Curve merchandise store.
More shirts throughout the year as well.
Yeah, we've got some extras that we're going to give away throughout the course of the summer for sure. And that's, you know, the truth is you'll be able to go on illegalcurve.com/merchandise, and then that will have a link to the store eventually. So James Robinson says, I'm shirtless and I may or may not be wearing any pants. Well, that puts you in the same category as Ezra Ginsburg. Somehow I still let him in my house.
That's true. When he showed up not wearing pants, it was a little awkward, wasn't it?
It was a little concerning.
Yeah, I don't blame you with that. All righty, let's there's Mal Paris wanting to know if we're going to have toques. It's going to be a wide variety. The Illegal Curve toques are, of course, a classic collection.
I don't think we're going to do toques.
Well, we might. You never know. Just stay tuned is what I'm going to say. Stay tuned. We'll have more information.
We're going to have lots. I mean, it's been a lot of fun. The reception has been great. So we asked Alan.
Attaboy, Alan.
What's the guy? Oh, God, now it's eluding me. What's the guy from North Dakota? He's a farmer in North Dakota. I think he has like four Illegal Curve. He won like four IC game winning goals. So he's got, or OT pools or whatever. So he's got like four toques. I kept sending him to North Dakota. It was a lot of work.
IC Kyle K?
What?
No.
And then New Norway Rick, who is out in Alberta, he has at least two, maybe three toques. So icy underwear? I don't think so, Corey. That's a bridge too far.
Let's bring back the toques.
We don't wear undies. That's the problem, Corey.
There's no question about toques. But the hats are definitely the next thing. We're gonna have some. We're gonna keep that the 3930s, the new era style baby hats.
Yeah.
And anyways, so it's a lot of fun. We're having a great time with it. We're loving the fact that people are. Tico Napoli, who's obviously one of the winners, he wants me and Ezzy to autograph it, not Drew.
I'm a little offended. That
will devalue it. Smart man, Tico Napoli.
Tico Napoli, we would never sign it because, you know, as I forget who mentioned it earlier, but that would just devalue it.
And, well, I think
my signature looks like a 5-year-old signature.
I think, so. Ezzy, what we'll do is you'll maybe come with me to meet Tico Napoli because absolutely. I think, you know, you need a little more trance going in you.
I was going to say, haven't you guys spent enough time together?
No.
I know several people in Transcona. It's a great
area. I know.
Let's do it. We'll go. We'll have some drinks, and we'll go tip some flamingos down there.
There may be James Robinson's talking about a hockey stick. So there may he said edible, but we may have some illegal curve hockey sticks in the future. Maybe some mugs.
And
we'll just like I said, you know, guys, there's nothing stopping you from sending us an email or just message us on Twitter, either our personal ones or the illegal curve one, and let us know what you guys want, and we're happy to. You know, kind of get a consensus and let the people speak. And we'll work over the course of August to make it happen.
And if these last few minutes here are going to be a bit of a throwaway segment, as we used to say, I want to take this opportunity for everyone who's watching live, listening to the podcast. Like, thanks for just being on this ride, because when TSN 1290 shut down back in February, like, we had no idea what we were going to do, but it was never a question that we were going to shut this down. So, you know, to everybody who's watching and like I said, you know, checking out the podcast, maybe going for a walk, whatever, you know, we appreciate the love because it goes right back at you. That's why we love giving away shirts and, you know, talking to you guys and, you know, bringing up the comments on chat. We've been doing this for 12 years. We love it. We're going to keep doing it. But honestly, from the bottom of our hearts, thanks for being with us and sticking with us, because, you know, Dave, Drew, and I talk about it all the time. The people that we meet and the great comments that we get, the texts that we get, you know, it was overwhelming when 1290 shut down, and we love it that everyone, you know, was following along with the Jets, with the post-game shows, and we're going to keep that going, you know, starting again in October. So even though Drew's going to tell me that I got a little too heartfelt, that's the type of guy that I am. But honestly, I mean it. I mean, we love, you know, the support. Like, I ran into someone at the Diversity Garden. Naomi and I took the kids there on Drew's recommendation. And it was as diverse as I thought it was going to be. But, you know, I didn't get the guy's name, but, you know, he recognized my voice because Ruben was kind of walking into his children, and he said, you know, I love the show and I love what you guys do. I wasn't even wearing an icy shirt. My voice is just so well recognized and sexy, right, Drew? So I mean, honestly, I just, you know, it's overwhelming, and you know, we're going to continue doing this because of all you great fans. So that's all I want to say.
I you know what, I can't say it any better than Mr. Ginsburg did right there, Dave.
No, I mean, look, the reality for us was we didn't even think about stopping.
No,
it wasn't even a thought in our minds, and everything set
up. Can't stop, won't stop. Like Pete.
Can't stop, won't stop. Let's go. You know, and it's the truth is, everything set up for us to have success. It really is. Like, we had the website already, which, you know, pumps out a ton of content and really has become, I would say, probably one of the best resources you're going to find on the internet for Jets news. If I may be so humble. and the truth is that because of that infrastructure, because of the way circumstances with COVID worked, that we ended up doing a lot of Zoom, which as a result, I started putting started using our YouTube, which is really about all of our social media. That was the one we never really ever used. And all of a sudden we started using the YouTube and building that up unbeknownst that we would actually need it. And then, and you know, we were, I don't remember how many subs we had, but we had a decent number. And then the news happened and, you know, the three of us talked, and within like an hour of that conversation, it was like, boys, we'll do what we need to do to get this rolling for Saturday. We're not missing a beat. And Drew, credit to him, figured out the infrastructure that we needed to put in place to have this show continue in its format, to use the infrastructure we had already created. And it's like, I said this to everybody, like I say it to anybody who will listen, and it's the truth. Ezzy's 100% right. There's nothing better than the show in the current format, And I wouldn't go back for all the money in the world. Like, it's
let's not get carried away now, Dave.
No. But we already had a lot of independence, within the framework of our show. But now this current format it's just the best.
It's going to be great, Drew, when there's a mid-August pop-up show and Dave announces that he's officially joined Kenny and Rick. and it's like when Sting joined NWO.
I just think like it's just been so phenomenal, and the chat really does just add such a fun element that I can't even imagine not having the chat. And you know what? I just want to relay, like, talking to Sandy and Tracy and just, you know, how they conveyed to me the idea that it formed a community for them that they are a part of. And I said to them, you know, the cool thing for me is you guys pay attention even when to each other, not necessarily to what's going on with us. And I love that. And I love the fact that, you know, we could be talking about X and you guys are talking about Y, but it doesn't really matter. And then we all come back together. So, you know, we are happy to have this platform to create, you know, that community for folks who are interested in the Winnipeg Jets, for folks who are interested in the Manitoba Moose. And like I said, it's just going to be better next year because obviously we're taking time off and I don't really want to talk to you guys, but the truth is, we are going to.
Dave means Ez and Drew, by the way. He doesn't mean.
Yes. No. I'm happy to talk to the folks. I meant Drew and Ezzy. But the reality is, you know, we're going to do some things next year that'll make this format even better. And we're already looking forward to what we're going to present for you guys in September.
You know what? You guys have summed it up better than I ever could. So I'm going to say thank you to our sponsors because they're the ones who, in addition to all the people in the chat and everybody listening and watching and everything else, the sponsors certainly make this show a possibility. That's our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. They're reopening in August. So get out there. You have to be double vaxxed and or present a negative COVID test within 72 hours. So be sure to support our friends.
Or there's a third option, or have a very good punchline.
I'm ignoring you. That was not the case there. In fact, you just ruined the entire show with that bad joke, but that's
Kevin
okay.
Kevin Bozeman, end of September, I will be there.
There you go. So be sure to get to check out our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. They're reopening in August. Like I said, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Boston Pizza, and our friends at Seagram's. Support these businesses because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and Illegal Curve Hockey. We thank you all for joining us. As Dave said, as Ezzy said so eloquently, really, your presence and your being here is what makes this so much more fun. And we appreciate every second that we all get to spend together virtually. But one day, maybe we'll.
I don't know about every second, Drew. I mean,
well, you know, I enjoy the audience, not so much you there, big boy. One day, maybe we'll all get together and see if we can have an Illegal Curve get together or an outing or something along those lines. We really do appreciate it. For Dave Manouk in the top right, for Ezra Ginsberg in the bottom middle, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until. Really, sometime coming up soon. We'll let you know when we do our pop-up shows, or at the very least, until after the Labor Day long weekend. We won't be gone too long. Don't worry, Jeff.
And illegalcurve.com is always live. Don't forget.
Illegalcurve.com is always there. You can't get away from us that much away from us.
Well, and we're coming to Transcona, so.
There you go, exactly. And until then, until we see you again sometime very soon, we wish you good night and good luck, and thanks for watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.